Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. So you probably heard me shuffling around a little bit. So I'm getting ready here. I'm still typing stuff up, and there's a lot to do today. It's a very busy day, and we'll have Jean checking in just a little bit. I'm sure she's been working on stuff as well. And so this is you know, everything about Action Radio is unusual when I think about it. We break all the rules. We do everything different. You know, I have Jean is our producer, but also, you know, researcher, presents stories, you know, helps me with all kinds of stuff here during the show itself. But I don't know any other producers that actually present stories on their show. And, you know, of course, I have the best producer. That's why I'm able to do that. So we'll get to her live as soon as she gets going here. There's many things happening. Today, though, I want to concentrate on the debt and the national debt and the economy and a constitutional budget. And this, I think for a lot of people, when we get into the nitty-gritty and the bills, you know, sometimes people get bored. The sensational topics have much broader appeal, like when we did the Free Britney show. That was huge. Chris Elliott was huge. We just did a recent show on President Nobody. And that show was big too. And I'm not, you know, it's incredible. We never know which shows are going to go, you know, wildly off the scale, but those tend to do that. It was Friday's show. And I forgot exactly where, maybe because we had Donnie Chapman, known as Chappie. I think that was his first show. And of course, all his friends were listening, and then they told their friends and they told their friends, and away we go. And so there's certain shows, but for some reason, and I don't want to sound like I'm frustrated because I'm not. I think it's an education process. But the real details are what make the difference in your life. The actual legislative process, you know, getting into the muck, you know, or watching the sausage being made, as they say, of legislation. Those who like sausage shouldn't watch it being made. Sending the legislation, it's a messy process. There's a lot that goes into it. And unless you love the details, and not a lot of people do sometimes, especially if you're just listening, I think you miss how important these things are. Because, you know, you think, oh, national debt, $30 trillion. What does that mean? Well, that means everything you buy gets more expensive. That means you don't have as much money. And I was thinking of an example this morning. Let me bring Jean in the program. Good morning, Jean. How's life looking for you up there in the soon to be frozen north?
Very good. Thank you. Good morning.
Okay. Good morning. So feel free to jump in any time. But inflation is like about 5% right now, or actually it's heading more for 6. But let me use 5 because I can do those numbers more easily in my head. When you hear that inflation is 5%. 5% of something isn't a whole lot because you still got 95% of the other. But when you think about, and we talk a lot about this with Derek Parker, and we're going to do this again on Friday because a lot of things are happening. Inflation's going up. They say it's transient. I knew it wasn't. There's no way. All the underlying factors headed towards it. They're talking about raising the debt ceiling. There's only one voice that I know of that is saying lower the debt ceiling and cut spending. And I'll explain how that works in a little bit. And the only voice is Action Radio. I mean, we're it. Every other source you go to, from government sources to media sources, even One American News, well, you'd think would know better. They all start off with, we have to raise the debt ceiling to meet our obligations. And that is the biggest economic lie out there. And I'll explain that a bit. But let me put this inflation thing into perspective. 5% inflation means that you lose 5% of your money. Okay, now people don't think about that because, you know, everything costs 5% as much. So you're paying 5% more for the same thing you paid, you know, 5% less for, you know, last year. And so you think, well, that's not such a big deal. Well, it is a big deal. Let's put this in perspective. 5% means that every dollar you have is worth 95 cents. It has 95 cents in purchasing power. Well, that's not so bad. I still got 95 cents on a dollar. Okay, well, $10, that means you've got $9.50. It means $100. You know, your purchasing power is 95, so you've lost $5 per 100. Okay, well, 1,000, that means you've got $950 worth of purchasing power. Now you're up $50. Okay, if your net worth is $100,000, that means you have $95,000. You've lost $5,000 of purchasing power. Okay, your everything you own is now worth $5,000 less. Okay, let's say you have $1 million worth of stuff. You know, your house, your investments, cars, all that kind of stuff. You've got $1 million. Okay, so that million is now worth, you know, $950,000. You've lost $50,000. All right. He didn't even do anything. It's just gone. The government took it. How did they take it? Well, they printed money. They put more dollars in circulation, making each dollar less. They borrowed money, and they borrowed money to pay off the people that don't work. They borrowed money to pay off foreign aid. They borrowed money to pay off all the illegal aliens that are coming here. They borrowed money for all kinds of things that have nothing to do with you because you sure as hell didn't vote for it, but you're now out. So you have $500,000 worth of stuff. You got, you know, $250,000 house. You know, you've got some cars, maybe some investments, things like that. You know, so there's your $500,000. So that'd be $15,000, would be 10%. So you're out $25,000. Okay, you got $25,000, you know, less in overall assets than you had last year, simply because inflation went up 5%. Okay, so when you put it in that kind of perspective, that makes a big deal. A big deal. And when you look at the overall economy, if we lose 5% of our purchasing power in a trillion-dollar economy, what's that? That gives you $950 billion. You've lost $50 billion in a trillion-dollar economy. And our economy is, you know, our federal budget is $5 trillion. So $5 trillion would be, you know, I'm not going to do the math. At this point, the numbers kind of explode. Gene? Is this able to be followed easily? Does this make sense?
Yeah, I'm surprised it's just 5% when I look at how much groceries have gone up, how much gas has gone up, how much housing has gone up. It's mm-hmm. like that's way more than 5%.
Well, see, those are individual items, and you're absolutely right. I mean, inflation's not linear. It's not unitary. It's not just one thing, because some things are probably even going down in price. But you don't see those. But the overall effect of the economy, they're saying 5 or 6%. And that could be completely wrong. It could be 12% they're lying to you. This is really an excellent point. There's John, I forgot his last name. He has a website. I should probably check it out. Maybe I'll check it out today or tomorrow. Shadow Stats. And Shadow Stats used to do things. I used to check. I didn't check inflation so much. I checked unemployment. Because unemployment during the Obama, you know, the abysmal economy, I don't like the word abysmal because it pretty much was. It was an abysmal economy. It was horrible. It was growing so slowly. They called it a recovery. Well, if that was a recovery, the patient's going to be in the hospital for decades because we recovered at that rate. You know, Trump turned it all around. But the abysmal economy was so lackluster, so bad that unemployment was huge, but they covered it up. See, back in the Clinton administration, they changed the way they measure unemployment. And so there are actually six measures of unemployment. The one that they always broadcast in the news is the most optimistic one. It's the one where they actually survey people and find out how many people are out of work and how many people are looking. Okay, so that's usually, I think it was about 6 to 10% or whatever it was. Well, that's not everybody who's unemployed. There's a lot of unemployed people who aren't looking. Well, they don't get counted. There's a lot of people that are out of the workforce for all kinds of reasons. Well, not counted either. So the real unemployment rate is the total number of people that can work versus the total number of people that are. That's the workforce participation rate. That is a much more accurate measure, but they don't broadcast that because the media, you know, sucks up to the Democrats and makes, you know, Republicans look bad. So during the abysmal economy, they were broadcasting it differently. But because Clinton changed the numbers, changed the way that these things were measured, it always looked better. If you look at the actual unemployment rate measured the way they used to measure it during the Depression, unemployment was about 25%. Okay, which is about what it was in the Depression. So during the Obama economy, the Obama years, our economy was actually in a depression unemployment state. But you never heard, I'm shuffling my mic around. You never heard that because that didn't fit the narrative. That didn't fit the America. Obama's here. We got a black guy as president, so everything's fine. You know, basically it was their message. And if you criticize it, you're racist. You know, but if you look at, and I can check it out for tomorrow too. I didn't think, I've forgotten about this, but John something. Just look up Shadow Stats. If anybody's ever curious, and take a look at that. But I'm sure the numbers on inflation are changed too. So they may be broadcasting 6%, but it could be 20% for all we know. We don't know. All we know is things are getting a whole lot more expensive. And it's all by government. This is government inflation. This is borrowing to spend on the stimulus package, to spend on the Green New Deal, to spend on all the stuff they want to spend on. And so this is a huge problem. And then, of course, I'm going to get into the main argument, what's going on now. Gene, still with me? Any questions,
yes,
anything
yes.
I should elaborate on?
No questions.
Okay. All right, let's talk about the big game. Let's talk about what really happens in Washington, that they play this game. And again, there's only one voice calling for lowering the debt ceiling, and that's us. Okay. There's only one voice calling for changing the obligations so that you don't have to get to the debt ceiling, and that's us. And why were the only, well, there are probably other voices out there. Maybe Greg Hunter. He's a guy that is probably calling for this, so I should check up on his. I did a lot of prep for this show, but the economy is going to be ongoing. And so these are all things. I'm going to start writing these things down. Greg Hunter. You guys can check this out, too, on your own. Greg Hunter. And I'll do shadow stats. I'm just writing stuff down here, shadow stats. And, Gene, if you're curious, you know, if you want to dash away and just kind of look up those two, there might be something interesting there as well. But or you can just listen to the how I explained the game. So the game in Washington, the big lie is that we have to raise the debt ceiling to meet our obligations. Otherwise, we default on the full faith and credit of the United States, and we can't do that. Okay? That's a lie. That is a huge lie. It is a lie of such whopping proportions I can't tell you. Because the one thing that they never tell you is, what if we change the obligations? What if we cut spending to meet the debt ceiling? What if we cut spending below the debt ceiling? Heaven forbid. What if we actually lower the debt ceiling? And this is all the stuff I'm calling for, okay? Because I know it can be done, all right? And the reason I know it can be done is my hero, Calvin Coolidge. Calvin Coolidge cut the federal budget in half. Hear that, folks? Hear that, Democrats out there in Marxist land? He cut the federal budget in half. Not only did he do that, he cut the national debt in half. And the result of that was the Roaring Twenties. Okay, one of the greatest economic booms this country has ever seen. Okay, so you know that cutting the federal budget and cutting the national debt makes the economy boom. Okay, so if you don't want to live under Marxist inflation, oppression, spending, socialism, you know, you don't have to. We haven't lived under that. You know, a lot of people are trying to get rid of it, but not enough. There's not enough people marching in the streets saying Biden is a fraud. There's not enough people marching in the streets saying we don't want inflation. And we don't have to have it. If the government stopped spending and stopped borrowing, we wouldn't have it. So let's get back to our example. So here's the way the game works in Washington. They appropriate money. In other words, they pass a bill. They pass a law that says we're going to spend $5 trillion on socialism. Let's just use that. That's the latest one now. They say it's 3.5. It's really about $5 trillion. So they're going to spend – that's more than the government takes in, by the way, in revenue. Okay, so they're already exceeding the total federal revenue is already being exceeded in one bill. That's why it's such a catastrophe. So let's say they pass that bill. They pass that bill for $5 trillion. Well, the government doesn't have $5 trillion to pay for it because they have $5 trillion literally for everything else, and they can't even pay that. Okay, so then that becomes an obligation, okay? So you pass a bill saying you're spending $5 trillion, but you don't have $5 trillion. So you call that an obligation. So then the government has to borrow that money to pay that $5 trillion obligation. Well, they can't borrow $5 trillion because the debt ceiling says you can't borrow $5 trillion because you're at the debt ceiling. So then the big lie comes out. And the big lie is, we have to raise debt ceiling to pay our obligations. When the truth is, they never had to make that obligation in the first place. And even if they did, they can always void it. They can always cut it. They can always get rid of it. So there is never, ever, ever, ever a reason to raise the debt ceiling. Oh, I don't, maybe, you know, declared war. Okay, let's use that as an example. Certainly not a manufactured pandemic. But there's never a reason to raise the debt ceiling. These obligations are things that they buy, you know, they authorize. And then they have to try and find a way to pay for it. So, Gene, can you imagine if you had a credit card where whenever you wanted something, you go out and spend it. Bill goes to the credit card department. Credit card company says, "Oh, wait a minute, you can't buy that. You don't have the money." Well, just raise my debt ceiling. Okay, that's what Congress is effectively doing. They're calling the credit company, which is the Treasury, and or the Fed. I'm not sure where the difference lies, but then they say, "Well, wait a minute." You know, you don't have the money. I'll just raise my debt ceiling. You know, so what's the difference between somebody calling a credit card company to get their debt ceiling raised and Congress calling the Treasury and Congress raising, in fact, Congress is raising their own debt ceiling. Actually, that's not quite accurate. It'd be like you call your credit card company and say, "I'm raising my credit limit." Yeah, 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 yeah. And then you just keep spending money. Well, sooner or later, what's going to happen to the credit card company if everybody raises their own credit limit and keeps spending money? Gene? What's going to happen to the credit card company?
It's not going to be there.
Exactly. It's going to collapse. It's going to be destroyed because there's going to be so much debt that they can't support it. They can't pay for everybody else's debt without getting the income to cover the expense. They can't pay the people that the people who have the credit cards, you know, spent money on. And so that's called a default. All right. Now, what that would mean for the economy is the entire economy would default. So what's happening right now is what I call economic treason. Okay. They are sacrificing our country. This is a suicidal path. Republicans are blocking it temporarily because and they're doing it. They're doing the right thing for a stupid reason. I've got articles on all this stuff. I've been going over this for a little while here. But what they're saying is they're not going to they voted not to raise the debt ceiling. In fact, this is not going to be a reconciliation bill either. See, Democrats, whenever they want to pass something, they call it reconciliation, but it's not. Reconciliation requires that you are reconciling the bill with the budget. Since they don't have a budget, there are no reconciliation bills. A budget comes from appropriations, usually 12. There are 12. This process has all been done in Congress for 100 years or so. So they have like 12 appropriations bills where they appropriate the money, and that's the budget. And each different area holds hearings, different committees hold hearings. They hold hearings on their special part of the budget that they're responsible for. They pass an appropriation, and it all comes together in a budget. Now, if you have to change something in that, or if you have to fix something, or if you have to reconcile something with something else in that federal budget, that's a reconciliation bill. That's only a reconciliation bill. So you have to have a budget to be reconciling. So what the Democrats are calling reconciliation is really, something they just want to they just want to do themselves without Republicans. Okay. So we could call it a party exclusion bill, because that's really what it is. The Democrat Party is acting exclusively on their own without Republicans. So the Republicans are saying, because they have 50 votes, all right, and the vote was 48 to 50. So I think Joe Manchin and I don't know pronounce her name well. Sienna, I should learn her, because these are the two people that are basically saving the economy right now. And they're both Democrats. Right? So you've got the two independents that are really Democrats, Bernie Sanders and I think Senator King in Maine. And so what the Republicans are saying is we're not going to let them make this a reconciliation bill and raise the debt ceiling. They're going to have to do that on their own. And so, which is kind of stupid. What they really should be saying is we're not going to raise the debt ceiling. We're just not going to do it. But they're not doing that. And the reason they're blocking the Democrats from making this reconciliation and raising the debt ceiling is because they want to be able to blame the Democrats when things go wrong. Personally, I can't think of anything more childish than doing this so you don't get blamed. So the Republicans, even if the economy crashes, they want to be able to say, don't blame us. We didn't do it. It's not our fault. Blame the Democrats. They did it. They're the ones who raised the debt ceiling. They're the ones that do this. Nah, 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 nah. Don't blame me. That to me is incredibly childish. And so that's what we're facing right now. And so it's a very interesting situation. And I'm going to lead into, through all this, my own article that I wrote on a constitutional budget. But I want to make sure that everybody's okay, everybody understands where we are and everything is, and that I haven't failed to explain something. So Jeannie, if you can get me all caught up here, make sense so far?
Yes, it does. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Because I know this gets dry. I know this gets, but I believe it's necessary. And even if this isn't the most popular show we've ever done, the knowledge, I think, is essential. Let me play a little quick thing here, because we're looking for sponsors for our show, as always, as we grow bigger and bigger. The bigger we get, the more we can spread our message. Here at Action Radio, we are looking for sponsors. We have 30 and 60-second spots available for your announcements. And we have 3-minute live call-ins to talk about your products and services available. Action Radio is the next evolution beyond talk radio. Join us and let us help your business evolve. Think about being a sponsor of the future and not just a listener, and help us help your business grow as you help us plunge headlong into breaking new ground here on Action Radio every day. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. Leslie Cool. All right. So I got more buttons to push now, and I haven't played some of those for a while because we've been so busy with our two-hour format. I'm really enjoying the 3 hours. It gives me much more chance to explain, to get things covered, to get more guests, more reporters. We're just getting too jammed up at 2 hours. So, but I'm still getting used to starting an hour earlier. I'm not quite there yet. You know, my sleep patterns have gotten a little bit crazy. Jeannie, you find that? I mean, how long does it take, you know, to adjust to, like, even an hour difference, like when daylight saving comes or goes, everybody complains, everybody, you know, it takes, I think, what is it, 2 or 3 weeks before you get used to an hour change in your schedule? Do you know what the stats are on that?
Yeah, I don't know how long it takes. Yeah, it takes a while, though.
Yeah. Anyway, so hope you're all enjoying our new 6 o'clock start time. And that's 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central. 5 Mountain and 4 Pacific. Who's that? I wonder if anybody's awake in the East Coast or are they getting the podcast? Yeah, for all you early risers, well, the stock market guys, the guys that get to work at 5 o'clock because the market opens up at 6 o'clock California time, which is kind of interesting. All right, so I wrote an article in Canada Free Press called A Constitutional Budget. I also made a video of it. And the video I posted all over Facebook, I've sent it to all kinds of people. I sent it to Dr. Walter Williams when he was at George Mason University. Dr. Williams passed away 5-6 months ago. I'm not sure which, but he was one of my favorite people. He was one of my first big interviews at WEBY, and it was incredible to get him on. We spent about 20 minutes, which was good. I mean, you know, these guys are used to, like, you know, three. And so I got 20 minutes with Dr. Walter Williams, and who's a personal hero of mine. And so we talked about the constitutional budget. And he never said anything like this. And this is actually after the interview. I wrote my article, and I sent it to him. And, oh, no, it wasn't May 9th, 2017. So actually, I'd been at WBY 2 weeks. I started March. I started, so March, April, May. So, yeah, this would have been after he was on. Anyway, so I tried to get his PhD, you know, candidates to actually work on the constitutional budget, and they never did. Nobody seemed to have much interest in this, which I find fascinating in and of itself. But a constitutional budget is where you actually take Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, which is where the delegated powers are to spend money in the Constitution. And that's what they're allowed to spend money on. And that's all they're allowed to spend money on. And it's really quite fascinating that the government has so exceeded that, and nobody cares. Nobody thinks about it. So our topic tomorrow, when I talk to Jonathan Mosley, I want to bring a lawsuit to the Supreme Court that says that the federal budget is unconstitutional because it violates Article 1, Section 8. That's never been done before either. But I posted on Facebook. I've gotten a lot of support for it. And I'm going to ask Jonathan how we go about doing that. If that doesn't shake up the deep state, I don't know what will. If we ask the Supreme Court to declare that the federal budget is unconstitutional because it exceeds Article 1, Section 8. Gene?
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be. So that's a long-term project. And again, do I expect the Supreme Court to declare the budget unconstitutional? No. Well, not at first anyway. But what I do expect is to raise a hell of a lot of public education. I want people to start thinking that that's even a possibility. See, people think that we have to get laws passed to have an impact, and that's not true. You know, I think 90% of our impact is going to be in people's psyche. When all of a sudden they realize, A, they can write a bill that might end up on the president's desk, and B, as we introduce these new concepts that nobody else in media has even thought of and probably never would, that all of a sudden people expand their horizons for what is possible. Because we're talking about it, and we present a logical case. And here's the crazy thing about it. Obviously the federal budget is unconstitutional because it exceeds Article 1, Section 8. Okay, so it's an open and shut case. We can't lose if you take it on the merits. Now, we can lose on everything else because the deep state's going to come in and Congress is going to scream and yell and the media is going to call me a racist. You know, that's just a given. But on the merits, we cannot lose that case because the federal budget does exceed Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. So the question is how much? So I wanted to find out that for myself, actually. So I did an experiment. I took Article 1, Section 8, and I took every budget source I could find, and there's a lot of them. There's no one – even the federal budget they publish doesn't have all the departments and things like that. And they don't break it down into a way that's accessible. And so I took every clause in Article 1, Section 8. In fact, you can go through it. I should bring that out to here too, although I do have it in the article. And you can follow along and say, well, what does that fund? And what does that fund? And when you do that, it puts you in a different mindset too. So I wrote this May 9th of 2017. And it's in Canada Free Press. And so you can just pull it right out. Now, some idiot moron twiddly did a graphic say, you know, with Capitol Hill. Actually, they took a dollar, you know, and they have Capitol Hill and Engel, and says it's time, balance the budget. And I'm here to tell you, this article has absolutely nothing to do with balancing the budget. That is so far, that is such a limited goal to what we're talking about. That's like saying, you know, I want to row across the Atlantic Ocean, and you get as far as dipping your toes in the water. Okay, well, okay, I'm done. No, that's nothing to do with what we're talking about. So forget the graphic. It was done by an idiot. I tried to get it changed, but it was already there, so I'm stuck with it. All right, let me just start reading. This is weird. I don't think I've done this before. Just read my own article. So let's go. During this entire budgeting and continuing resolution process, there are two words that will never be put together. They are constitutional and budget. Why? Because no one in Washington wants to be restrained by the Constitution when it comes to getting money, spending money, and especially spending money they don't have, which is why we are some $20 trillion in for the national debt. But it never had to be this way. Okay, just to let you know, in 2017 it was $20 trillion. Now we're approaching $30 trillion. So the situation is getting far worse. But the basic problems that I talk about in this article in 2017 are still here in 2021, 4 years later. Back to my article. It's one thing to talk about the Constitution. It's quite another to actually live by it. The Supreme Court doesn't. They assume judicial review, a power they were never supposed to have. Presidents have gotten us into wars that were never declared. And Congress has spent us into a debt from which we may never recover. But if we ever get serious about paying off the national debt, it can be done. And the simple answer, as in most cases, is to look to the Constitution. Next little subheading, how much a constitutional budget would cost? And here's where the experiment comes in. So I got to wondering how much a constitutional budget would cost. The easy part is finding the constitutional budget items, Article 1, Section 8, of the delegated powers to Congress. Assigning a dollar figure to those items was the challenge. The numbers listed are the best available information I could find. In fact, I want to start doing this every year. We're going to get a budget committee here at Action Radio, and we're going to publish a constitutional budget every year. I could do it myself, but I've got a show to run, so I'm hoping to get some economists together and actually start doing that. So maybe I'll get some college kids and some econ majors and freak out their professor. What are you working on? We're coming up with a constitutional budget. A what? This would be interesting. Anyway, so back to the article. The latest summary budget information comes to us from Kimberly Amadeo from the website The Balance. I checked that website. It's still there, by the way. She says, in fiscal year 2018, the federal budget is $4.268 trillion. You got that, folks? $4.268 trillion. That's under the $5 trillion they want to borrow now for their experiment, above the entire budget that already exists. So back in 2018, fiscal year, $4.268 trillion. Most of this, 63%, pays for mandated benefits, such as Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. The U.S. government will receive $3.916 trillion in revenue, okay? So there's the deficit. So the deficit is how much they're spending versus how much they take in, okay? So $4.268 trillion is how much they spent. $3.916 trillion is how much they got in revenue, and that's taxes, fees, you know, duties, you know, whatever, all the sources of revenue of the federal government, that's where they were. That creates a $352 billion deficit for October 1, 2017 through September 30th, 2018. So you got that? So in 2018 fiscal year, there was a $352 billion deficit. Okay, that's nothing compared to what now the deficit's in the trillions. Right? This is how bad things have gotten. But that's how it was, okay? So the article goes back to my article, says spending breaks down to mandatory $2.696 trillion, discretionary $1.243 trillion, and interest on the national debt $329 billion. Okay, that's wasted money. Okay, the interest on the national debt now exceeds the defense budget. Let me say that again. The interest on the national debt, which is empty money, it's not doing anything except covering how much they've borrowed, now exceeds the defense budget. So when you start complaining about the defense budget, keep in mind that's number two to the national interest, just interest on the national debt, not the national debt, just the interest on it. Okay, so that's wasted money. So that's the money that you pay every month if you carry a balance on your credit cards. Doesn't accomplish anything except makes the other folks rich. Well, it makes the people rich who hold government securities, which are usually large institutions, corporations, foundations, things like that. So our debt is being transferred. So the money is being transferred from you, from your taxes, to the people that hold the government debt. Corporations, foundations, George Soros, people like that. That's where it goes, okay? So my source on that 2018 budget is the Office of Management and Budget, March 16th, 2017, and the mid-session fiscal year review, mid-session review fiscal year 2017, again, Office of Management and Budget, and that was July 15th, 2016. So all my citations are in the article. Okay. Jean, questions?
No questions.
Okay. So you're probably disgusted. If you're disgusted, you're going to get more disgusted as I go through this. All right. So let's go through the constitutional budget. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1. Clause 1 of Article 1, Section 8 says the Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. But all duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. Okay. So I figure, well, who collects the taxes? The IRS. So I went to the IRS budget. IRS budget average for the last several years, $12 billion. So they spend $12 billion collecting all your money. Seems to me that's a whole lot to spend to collect money, all right? But apparently, of course, they collect the 3.9 trillion that year. So it seems like good. So $12 billion to get 3.9 trillion back. Yeah, that seems like a good investment. Customs and Border Protection, fiscal year 2014 budget was $12.4 billion. Source, DHS, that's Department of Homeland Security, .gov. However, only a small part of their responsibility concerns collecting duties, let's say 10% of what the Customs does. Customs and Border Protection is collecting duties. So their estimated cost of collecting duties, $1.2 billion. So Clause 1 costs the country $13.2 billion. Okay? The clauses regarding common defense and general welfare are from the preamble and are not specifically budget items. So that when they talk about, you know, the general welfare, so provide for the general welfare and the common defense is the defense budget. General welfare, when they talk about general welfare in the Constitution, they're not talking about welfare. They're not talking about government benefits. They're not talking about entitlements. They're talking about laws that apply equally, generally, to the whole population. So in other words, specific welfare would be laws that they pass today that specifically benefit individuals, corporations, you know, wacko environmental groups and things like that. The Green New Deal is not general welfare. It's in fact, it benefits specific people. When they funded electric cars or Solyndra or any of these other companies, electric generation, solar generation, all that stuff, that's not general welfare. Okay. That's specifically target information money. When Dr. Fascist gives out all his grants to the vaccine, to the colleges to develop what they're calling a vaccine, that's not general welfare. Actually, it's anything but. But those are the kind of things that really shouldn't be done. All right, so that's Clause 1, $13.2 billion so far. If you're keeping a running tally, that's where we are. Clause 2 of Article 1, Section 8, to borrow money on the credit of the United States. Brighten my screen a little bit here. From the website The Balance, that's the one I quoted to you earlier, mentioned above, interest on the national debt, $329 billion. So we're going to add that to the cost of government, $329 billion. Clause 3, to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states and with the Indian tribes. Okay, the closest I found was the International Trade Administration, $495 million, and the source of that was the House Appropriations Committee of 2017. International Trade Commission, $131.5 million, fiscal year 2016 request. Source, International Trade Commission website. Okay. Bureau of Indian Affairs, fiscal year 2016, $2.8 billion. Now, the Bureau of Indian Affairs Office of Energy and Economic Development, I'm guessing at 10% of the Bureau of Indian Affairs total budget, so $28 million. And that source of that is the Bureau of Indian Affairs website. So why did I take energy and economic development? Because that's what they're talking about, regulate commerce with the Indian tribes. And the closest was the Bureau of Energy and Economic Development. So I didn't take the whole Bureau of Indian Affairs budget, just the part that specifically applied to Clause 3. Interstate Commerce Commission. Okay, that was abolished in 1996, but it was replaced by, see, you think it's gone? It's not gone. It just came back under a different name. Replaced by the Surface Transportation Board. Fiscal year 2016 budget request was $34.8 million. And of course, the source of that was the Surface Transportation Board website. Questions so far, Gene? You can stop me anytime or ping our hotel bell because this is very dry stuff, but there's a reason I'm doing this. When I get to the total budget, you're going to be shocked when I get to the bottom of this article. Question?
Still with me with all the numbers? Okay. Yeah, no questions.
Okay. You know, and people think, gee, why do you keep asking Gene for questions? Because once I get rolling on this stuff, you know, it's better to ask a question. I do this all the time throughout the show. The reason I do that is because I want questions at the time. If you wait till the end, people forget the context of what you're talking about. Okay. So I like to have questions right when I'm talking about something. Don't wait till later. because at that point it's too late and people, and we, you know, then we really get lost. All right. Clause 4. This is Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. I'm not making any of this up. You can check it. Okay, this is all verifiable. That's why I'm giving you all the sources. Clause 4, to establish a uniform rule of naturalization. We got anything but at the border right now. Uniform rule of naturalization and uniform laws on the subject of bankruptcies throughout the United States. Okay, so I went to immigration. The Office of United States Citizen and Immigration Services, part of the Department of Homeland Security, is funded almost completely with user fees. So no specific budget allocation. I don't know if most people know that, but immigration services are funded by people who want to come here legally. Okay? That may be a big shock to you. So every time you – so all these Democrats that are pushing illegal aliens and all these politicians and corporations that want free labor, basic, and all these people – and the Catholic charities that we talked about yesterday, all these non-government organizations that are pushing illegal aliens here and they're getting funded to put them all kinds of places like that, legal aliens – do not cost this government anything because they pay for it themselves. They pay for it when they apply to come here legally. Shock of shocks. Did you know that, Gene?
No.
Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, the people that the Democrats want to get rid of, that say that they're racist slave owners, you know, attacking Haitians with whips from their horse, which of course is total BS. ICE in fiscal year 2016, $64 million. Think about that. That's the minimal cost. Illegal aliens cost what, $300-400 billion a year or more, and only cost $64 million for ICE? That's a good investment. Anyway, that was back then. It's probably a little more expensive now. Okay, so bankruptcies are covered in the IRS budget in clause 1. Okay, so we don't include bankruptcies in that in this thing. But you can see if you're keeping totals, $64 million plus $34.8 million plus $28 million. There you go. All right, clause 5: to coin money, regulate the value thereof and a foreign coin, and fix the standard of weights and measures. Okay, most people don't know this, but there's a lot of you know, when we talk about fixing the standards of weights and measures, the reason we're still on the English system, you know, inches, pounds, you know, gallons, all that kind of stuff, that's federal government. They could change the metric. And quite frankly, I kind of like the system wrong because I'm used to it. But that's where that comes from. That's why we're still on that system. When they talk about to coin money, that's what the mint does. The mint makes coins, and the government printing presses print the bills, okay? Regulate the value thereof. Well, how do they do that? Well, they do it by regulating the money supply. You know, the Federal Reserve does it, and the Federal Reserve is neither federal nor reserve. That's another story. We'll talk about that one day, too. But the point is that the government regulates the value of our money. So when you have 5% inflation, taking 5% of your money this year alone, that's because of the government, because they spend, they borrow, and they print. That's what it's all about. U.S. Mint budget for fiscal year 2015, $3.8 billion. And the source of that, U.S. Mint, fiscal year 2015, President's budget. National Institute of Standards and Technology, those are the folks that do the weights and measures, okay? $865 million. Now, that's something that's looking into. Why do we have, what did they spend $865 million on, you know, for standards and technology? Well, maybe it was the technology, but whatever it is, they spent a whole lot of money, okay? And I'm not sure where it all goes. All right. This website drives me crazy because it keeps bouncing to the top. So if I get frustrated here very soon, that's why. All right, source, House Appropriations Committee. Federal Reserve was excluded because they aren't federal or a reserve, and they could never be considered constitutional. So that's why I didn't put the Federal Reserve in Clause 5. Okay, Clause 6, to provide for the punishment of counterfeiting the securities and current coin of the United States. And I have U.S. Secret Service investigations for budget year 2015 because the Secret Service are the ones that punish counterfeiters, right? $375 million. Source, Congressional Research Service. U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC. Those are the folks that look into insider trading and fraud and securities things, okay? Fiscal year 2016, they're good. They're the good guys, okay? They can't look into members of Congress because they're exempt, but I wish they weren't. We're not. Okay, so Securities and Exchange Commission, fiscal year 2017, $1.78 billion. And that source of that is the Securities and Exchange website. Clause 6, that's done. Clause 7, to establish post offices and post roads. Okay, this is before the Intercontinental Highway System. They didn't say highway system, but I'm going to include them in the budget. U.S. Postal Service, you know, for establishing post office, now allegedly funds itself. There is no budget item for the U.S. Post Service, okay? The Federal Highway Administration, you know, the folks that build your highways, for fiscal year 2015, $39.8 billion. Source, Department of Transportation website, Federal Aviation Administration. And I put them in because even though this says post offices and post roads, the airplane wasn't invented when this language was written, Okay. In fact, the car wasn't either. So we're taking an air. The reason I do air is because a lot of our mail is carried by air. Okay, now, of course, a lot of it goes over the internet, but a lot of it, you know, for still to this day, mail, especially your junk mail, you know, is carried by airplane. Okay, so that's why the FAA is here. That's part of our infrastructure. It's part of our interstate transportation system. Budget request for the FAA fiscal year 2016, $15.83 billion, and that's from the Department of Transportation website. Okay, we got a few more clauses. Why don't we take a break? Because I know this is getting dry. I just know. It just is. Okay. So let me play you something here, just to sort of alleviate the boredom, wake you up again, because you know I understand how things can get a little crazy. All right, I'll be right back.
Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
You know, I get a little crazy reading all those numbers and things like that too. So I can only imagine how you folks feel. So let's wake you up and call for room service here. There we go. If you hear that tone, that means Gene wants to talk to me. All right. Where was he? Clause 8. Okay. Now some of these clauses are going to go fast because they really relate to the defense budget. So I kind of lump them all together. Clause 8: to promote the progress of science and useful arts by securing for limited times to authors and inventors the exclusive right to their respective writings and discoveries. Okay. Copyrights, trademarks, patents. This is incredibly important to a free market system. You have to have the right to protect your stuff, your inventions, your creations. You know, I'm working with the federal government on all kinds of things to protect Action Radio, and have been for years. It takes years. Okay, it's a long process. And if a trademark attorney or copyright attorney wants to step forward, please feel free. Yeah, I could use some help right now. But anyway, we're all registered with all these different things. But the thing is that most countries don't have that. In fact, Hillary Clinton, in one of her more disgusting things, wanted to harmonize her laws with other countries and have limited patents and don't do that. See, in a socialist country, you all need to watch the movie The Fountainhead, all right? Especially if you're ADHD like me and don't have the patience to read it. But The Fountainhead is a book by Ayn Rand, or Ayn Rand, if you care to pronounce it that way. That seems silly to me. But she wrote a book called The Fountainhead, and the movie has Gary Cooper, Patricia Neal, and some other folks. But Gary Cooper's a star. He's fabulous in the film. And it's all about protecting your work. It's all about, you know, the right to your work. If you produce it, it's yours and you get paid for it. And nobody can take that work away from you. That is a sacred principle of a free market system in a republic. You can't just have stuff. But the socialists, the Democrats, the Marxists, they said that there is no such thing, that everything has to be done for the public good, that everything has to be done, you know, to promote everybody. That, you know, you do things, you know, you have to serve your fellow people. This is what this stupid vaccine crap is all about, when they say that you need to take the vaccine to protect other people. Well, that's insane. Do I need to give away my money in my account to make other people rich? This is the same kind of thing. It doesn't make any sense. Why would you do that? You know, well, that's not the best example. I'm sort of, you know, flying off, you know, here on all directions. But the point is, you know, or I think the favorite one is, you know, I'll wear a seatbelt so you're protected in your car too. That's probably the best example. But the thing is that this group thing, that you have to subvert your creation to the common good, that you have to do things, you know, that favor everybody, and everybody has the right to say what your work should be, and they get to vote on it and decide by committee and all these other things. That takes away, you know, everything. All major change is done by individuals. All major shakeups, all major creations, inventions, it really comes down to one person doing it. And that's where it all starts. And, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm bragging here, but Action Radio, it was my idea. It just was, you know. And from there, this incredible organization is blossoming. But it really started on a bike ride. Literally, You know, I'm riding down I'm riding next to San Francisco Bay, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, the problem with talk radio is all they do is talk. You know, they never do anything. There's a few people that take action, but there's no real action taken in talk radio. So what we really need is action radio. Uh-oh. Light bulb started firing off in my head. I went, wait a minute. This might be something. That was 2014, and here we are. Okay, so it takes a while. But the point is that my idea is protected because it's mine, and I get to advance it and reap the benefits of it. And so, Gene, when we get Action Radio 1, our personal jet, start flying around the country, that's going to be a product of our creative process here, and that's protected by Clause 8 of the Constitution. U.S. Patent Office, $3.2 billion, Source House Appropriations Committee, 2017. Clause 9, to constitute tribunals inferior to the Supreme Court. That would be the federal judiciary. Okay, the federal judiciary received $6.7 billion for fiscal year 2015. Source, United States Court website. Okay, now I put the Supreme Court in there too. Okay, that's what they're allowed to do, you know, to create inferior courts for. But I figured it made sense to put the Supreme Court in there too. So our whole federal judiciary costs us $6.7 billion. It costs us a lot more with their opinions, but that's the actual cost of running it. Clause 10, to define and punish piracies and felonies committed on the high seas and offenses against the law of nations. Okay, the closest thing I found with piracies on the high seas was the Coast Guard. Oh, it flipped up to the top again. Stop doing that. This website's driving me crazy. Coast Guard. Here, let me scroll down again to where I was. Coast Guard operating expenses fiscal year 2016, $6.8 billion. Now, the Coast Guard really does pay for themselves for the drug seizures and when they used to seize illegal aliens before they become an escort service, you know, they would save a whole bunch of stuff. And offenses against the law of nations would be covered by the Department of Defense. Okay, Clause 11. This is the key one, to declare war, grant letters of marque and reprisal, which we really don't do anymore, and make rules concerning captures on land and water. Okay, so declare war. That's the power that Congress pretty much has handed over to the president. Okay, and that comes from the defense budget, which I'll get to. Clause 12, to raise and support armies, but no appropriation of money to that use shall be longer than 2 years. So that's why you don't have standing armies, even though we do. Violation of the Constitution. Clause 13, to provide and maintain a Navy. Okay, so the Department of Defense budget in 2017, fiscal year 2017, was $587 billion. It's closer to $800 billion today. But $800 billion is nothing compared to the $5 trillion they want to spend on socialism. Okay, so we're spending, you know, $800 billion to defend our country, $5 trillion to create a socialist Marxist state. I think the priority is a little out of whack. The defense budget is constitutional. The socialist budget is not. Clause 14. To make rules for the government and regulation of the land and naval forces, and that comes out of the operating expenses below. Clause 15, to provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, that would be the Democrats and Republicans who took over the country and put Biden in power, suppress insurrections and repel invasions. And Clause 16, there's only a couple more. Clause 16, to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia and for governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States, yada, yada, yada. That's all covered by the defense budget. Here we go. To Clause 17, to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such districts not exceeding 10 miles square as may by secession of particular states. Okay, that's D.C. That's Washington, D.C. Clause 17 covers D.C. Okay. In fiscal year 2013, the District of Columbia spent $2.8 billion in federal funds. Source, D.C. Fiscal Policy Institute. Okay. Clause 18, last one. You guys have been great hanging in so far. Clause 18, to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper, that's known as the Necessary and Proper Clause, necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers and all other powers vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States or in any department or officer thereof. Now we're going to get to the good stuff, folks. This is what you've all been waiting for. The cost of operating Congress and the legislative branch, according to the website. Oh, no, not yet. This is just Clause 18. Okay, I'm sorry. I previewed unintentionally. Let's just go to this one. The cost of operating Congress and the legislative branch, according to the website Skeptics Stack Exchange. That was a great one. Fiscal year 2014, $5.8 billion. So in fiscal year 2014, it cost almost $6 billion to run the legislature of the federal government. Okay. It's now, and then another thing here too, it would be impossible to determine the cost of the executive branch until it was determined which agencies and departments were in fact constitutional, and most of those are probably already covered in this article. Okay. We got another quote here. Robert Keith Gray in his book Presidential Perks Gone Royal puts the total Obama budget in 2012 for the White House Air Force One, vacations, and extra staff and czars. You know, they had a czar for everything, right? The health czar, the drug czar, whatever it was like that. And all their extravagances at $1.4 billion, which is way higher than normal. So when I talked about this Clause 18, necessary and proper, you know, to run the legislature and the executive, Obama spent $1.4 billion on stuff, vacations, Michelle Obama, you know, all kinds of extra stuff they didn't need. All right. And then, of course, the cost of the administration of foreign affairs, that would be the State Department, embassies, consulates, and operating expenses for those in fiscal year 2013, which is the last I got, was $8.8 billion. And that's the Department of State website. So the Foreign Service, our embassies, and everything else at the Department of State, and that doesn't count the rest of the Department of State, but just, you know, the Foreign Affairs Administration, $8.8 billion. Okay. Now, I have a disclaimer here. The numbers are all over the place. I mean, they really are. It's impossible to get a really accurate picture of this, which is why I was hoping Congress would do this, but they won't. I was hoping the media would call for it, even though I talked to a bunch of media sources. They wouldn't. And so I did it myself. Okay. And in fact, I've done it a couple of times. And the video was actually a later version of this. So you go to my video on my YouTube channel, or just go to Facebook or the Action Radio group, you can find it. Or just go online and look up a constitutional budget, Greg Penglis. There it is. All right. Okay, let's get our grand totals. Grand total for a constitutional budget. All right, so Gene, this is the moment you're waiting for. We need like a round of applause here. I do have a round of applause. I've got rounds of applause all over this website. Here we go. Round of applause, please. Yes, we've come to our grand totals of my article. All right. Grand total for a constitutional budget. So in other words, all those different clauses with all those different departments with all the things I mentioned, if you add it up, it comes to $1.029 trillion. That's it. $1.029. So basically $1 trillion of our federal budget is actually constitutional. That should shock the hell out of you. All right. Rest of the article, slightly less than a quarter of the $4.268 trillion requested for fiscal year 2018 for their budget listed above. So the fiscal year, let me say that again. So the fiscal year 2018 budget request, $4.268 trillion, only $1 trillion or $1.029 trillion is actually constitutional, which means the rest of it is not. So you want to look to savings. You want to look to removing your obligations. You want to look to cutting spending. All you have to do is go to the Constitution. You can cut 3/4 of your budget. Okay, let me say that again. If you go by the Constitution, we cut 3/4 of the federal budget, which means we'll have about $3 trillion extra per year for debt reduction. With a debt of $30 trillion, all right, with $3 trillion a year in surplus applied to the national debt, we pay off the national debt in 10 years. Okay? You all with me so far? That's what it means. The last part of my article, which means that at this time, federal budget is about 75% unconstitutional. Let me say that again. Our federal budget is 75% unconstitutional. Last line of my article, think about that the next time you hear any news report or discussion of the federal budget, the national debt, or raising the debt ceiling. All right. Gene's offline for a bit. If you can come back on, feel free. If not, I have more stuff to do. Actually, we're going to get to David Jones in just a little bit. Well, I got 6 minutes. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to play our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece. Gene, were you shocked by those numbers?
Hold on, my dog is still flipping out. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Oh, we get a live dog barking on Action Radio. Yeah. That's always fun. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let me. Feel free to take care of that. Let me play any Federalist number 5. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you have a comment? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just. What were you going to ask me?
Let me ask when we come back from the piece. But the fact that 75% of our budget is unconstitutional, and that if we have a surplus of about $3 trillion a year above what is constitutionally allowed, and that if applied to the national debt of $30 trillion, we could pay off our national debt in 10 years, all of it. I find that interesting. Actually, I find it more than interesting. Yeah. I find it incredible. Think about that for a minute. I'm going to play Anti-Federalist number 5, Santa Rosa Volunteers number 17, and after that, David Jones should be with us. Or not. We'll see. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments. insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, SRV1776.com. That's SRV1776.com. The pompous, arrogant, elitist John Jay, who wrote Federalist Paper No. 5, has such complete contempt for the American people that he obviously wants to rule over the people for their own good with his strong national constitution. However, the rebuttal in Anti-Federalist No. 5 is just the opposite. It is simple, short, honest, straightforward, takes John Jay's writing head-on, and makes complete hash of John Jay's weak propaganda. Anti-Federalist No. 5 was written and signed by an anonymous author known only as An Observer. Whoever it is appeals to my sense of logic and reason to take on the elitist and powerful through quiet ridicule, where you are making total fun of them, but it's not so obviously apparent to them. This is probably the easiest of my discussions of any founding document, because all I have to do is mention some select quotes to show you how An Observer turns John Jay's writing into mush. John Jay began Federalist No. 5 with the claim that the Union of Scotland and England should be the model of our states, and that a letter from Queen Anne to the Scotch Parliament would be the convincing evidence. An Observer writes, "It is a certainty that when the Union was the subject of debate in the Scottish legislature, some of their most sensible and disinterested nobles, as well as commoners, who were not corrupted by English gold, violently opposed the Union and predicted that the people of Scotland would, in fact, derive no advantages from a consolidation of government with England, but on the contrary, they would bear a great proportion of her debt and furnish large bodies of men to assist in her wars with France, with whom, before the Union, Scotland was at all times on terms of the most cordial amity." It appears quite clear that the Union envisioned by John Jay is based on force and subjugation. No wonder John Jay became our first Supreme Court Chief Justice. The elites were already moving in shortly after the ratification of the Constitution. An Observer further observes, "It deserves also to be remembered that the people of Scotland, in the late war between France and Great Britain, petitioned to have arms and ammunition supplied them by their general government for their defense, alleging that they were incapable of defending themselves and their property from an invasion unless they were assisted by government. It is a truth that their petitions were disregarded, and reasons were assigned that it would be dangerous to entrust them with the means of defense, as they would then have it in their power to break the Union." This definitely portends a future U.S. where the government would have all the arms and the people defenseless, all in order that the national government remain in power. In describing this absurd example in Federalist No. 5, An Observer states, "From this representation of the situation of Scotland, surely no one can draw any conclusion that this country would derive happiness or security from a government which would, in reality, give the people but the mere name of being free." The last paragraph of Anti-Federalist No. 5 is so good, there is no explanation that is needed, so let me close with this from An Observer. "I observe that the writer above mentioned takes great pains to show the disadvantages which would result from three or four distinct confederacies of these states. I must confess that I have not seen, in any of the pieces published against the proposed Constitution, anything which gives the most distant idea that their writers are in favor of such governments. But it is clear these objections arise from a consolidation not affording security for the liberties of their country, and from hence it must evidently appear that the design of Publius, in artfully holding up to public view the bugbear of such confederacies, can be with no other intention than willfully to deceive his fellow citizens." Publius is what John Jay called himself in the Federalist Papers. going on. I am confident it must be, and that it is, the sincere wish of every true friend to the United States that there should be a confederated national government, but that it should be one which would have a control over national and external matters only, and not interfere with the internal regulations and police of the different states in the Union. Such a government, while it would give us respectability abroad, would not encroach upon or subvert our liberties at home. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from foundingfathersquotes.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. I'm having so much fun with this. I mean, I really am. And so we shall continue on here. Gene. As soon as Gene's back on, we got a few minutes before. David could join us at any time. David Jones of Santa Rosa Volunteers. This is kind of cool because now I get with this extra hour, I get to play the piece that I make each week before David gets here, and you know, during our 6 o'clock hour, or at least I have a lot more flexibility than I had before. I'm really enjoying it. All right, let me read you something. I'm not the only as far as making a big alert to what's going on, I'm not the only person doing that. I'm the only person saying, talking about a constitutional budget, though. You trust me, look for it. Do an online search. Look anywhere you want. See if anybody else has even mentioned the term constitutional budget. You aren't going to find it. So let me just read this one thing. It's on my Facebook page. Peter Schiff. Apparently he has a show, too. Wow. So he tweeted out, Janet Yellen is lying when she claims that raising the debt ceiling is about paying the bills. So good. We concur there, absolutely. He says it's about not paying the bills. We have so much debt precisely because we don't pay our bills. Congress raises the debt ceiling so we can keep borrowing money and never pay our bills. And he's absolutely right there. Gene, comments on anything so far? If you have new stories, feel free. It looks like we're going to be open a bit until David joins us.
I just think it's sad that they use so much money that we don't have and they don't even bat an eyelash. I have a hard time comprehending that because we're not just talking $1 million. I mean, what they're doing, it's like, I don't even know how many zeros are behind it. It's insane. And when you look at it too, how much of what's in their whatever bills is all pork? How much is Nancy Pelosi? Millions of dollars. That should not be, if the American taxpayers are paying, you know, taxes, it should go throughout the United States and not be just earmarked for kind of like, I don't want to say bribes, but thank yous for people that supported her and stuff like that. And I know it happens all the time, but I don't think it's right. And I think it should be stopped. There's no reason for that.
But it's interesting. There's a conspiracy to lie to the American people. You know, there's no media source. I mean, Peter Schiff is one, but, you know, again, these people, they always complain, but they never offer solutions. We're the only news service that is actually offering solutions. And in fact, we're actually writing them. Okay. So my solution to the national debt is to have a constitutional budget. And that makes perfect sense to me. What about, Greg, what about, you know, Social Security and Medicare? Well, they're going to go to the states, obviously. Ideally, we get rid of Social Security and we go to a Chilean system where most people come out the equivalent of millionaires, you know, when they retire, because they're required to take 10% of their income every year and put it into a retirement account. You know, whether that's a money market or the S&P 500 or some fund like that, they have to invest that money. But that's their money and they get to pass it on to their family when they pass on, okay? So that it's not like Social Security, which, you know, when you die, it's gone. So it doesn't, you know, if you die the day after you get Social Security and you never get that first check, oh, well, they don't pay your family the money back, all right? So Social Security has always been an obsolete system because it's Social Security, not individual security. People seem to forget that. They actually name this correctly, Social Security. In other words, a double income tax. In other words, Congress takes money that they call Social Security for a retirement account for you that doesn't exist. They spend it. Then they have to borrow money to pay back you know, to pay the people when they actually do retire. So as more and more people are getting older and taking Social Security, which will include me pretty soon, you know, they're doing it. When they say the Social Security Trust Fund is running out of money, no, it's not. They're just running out of the difference between how much money is coming in and how much is going out. So when that happens, there'll be more people taking it than paying into it. Uh-oh. So what do? Well, they raise the retirement age. And they raise the Social Security tax. So all the younger folks are going to have to pay more money because Congress spent the money that should have gone to the retirees if they'd actually managed the system properly, which they didn't because it was never intended to be managed. It was always intended to be a second income tax to fund the government for social. In other words, everybody's security. We're all going to be more secure if everybody pays a second income tax. Isn't that special? Don't you feel happy, Jean?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So try to imagine, if you will, I want your opinion on this. If most of the major media sources came out and had a banner headline, 75% of federal budget is unconstitutional and therefore illegal. Try to imagine that. What do you think?
Excuse me. I think there's a lot of people that will think, oh, that's just fake news.
That's interesting.
Because I don't know if a lot of people really are that aware. I don't know if they make, you know, if they want to be aware or if they are. But you would think most people would be aware that how the government spends is not sustainable.
No, it's not.
And
really
all the free programs
they
do to certain populations, people, whatever, that's not sustainable.
You know, but it's very strange to me that other than Peter Schiff, you know, and he's just outlining the problem, but nobody's calling for a solution to actually cut the obligations. Like I explained in the first hour, you know, there's an easy way out of this. There always has been an easy way out. It's the Coolidge way out. You cut the budget, you know, and I'm saying 75%, and I proved it. I went through the numbers. You know, if anybody wants to dispute it or take me on, you know, is live chat working, by the way? I haven't looked yet. Let's see if
I haven't even started today.
Yeah, let's turn on the live chat. See if anybody's there.
That's where
people don't necessarily call in with the objections, but they go to live chat. So just to let you know, we do have our live chat working, and so I don't see anybody on it yet. But what you want to do is you go up to, I think it's the upper left corner of our episodes. In fact, if you can do that too, Jean, if you just pull up a regular episode and tell me where on the screen, I don't want to do it because I don't want to damage my show screen. I don't want to lose it. But just pull up a separate window and go to Action Radio with Greg Pangloss and see if you can find where the live chat button is. So you want to go, I think it's in the upper left-hand corner. So what you want to do is you want to open a free account with Blog Talk Radio, and then you can use live chat. And so you don't have to call us. You know, you can just text in your messages, and we'll get them. In fact, like I say, I think probably the people who are going to object the strongest to what I'm saying are most likely going to type in. You're free to disagree with me on the show. Anybody that knows the show well knows that I welcome disagreement, and we'll talk about it. I mean, I may disagree with your disagreement, probably will, but that's not the point. The point is that you should be able to air it, and as long as you're making logical, consistent points and stop making points when you've said the same thing, and I don't want to repeat endlessly, you know, the argument doesn't get better. It's not like wine. It doesn't get better with age, you know, so just keep your points consistent, then we're fine. That's not a problem. All right. I'm not sure. Something may have happened to David. He usually, he still might call in a little bit. You know, like I say, stuff happens. He's a busy guy. He has to earn a living too. All right. Let me move on to the next article in our economic free-for-all here. And let's talk about what happened in Congress. And I mentioned this earlier in the first hour. GOP blocks a debt limit hike government funding. Okay. This is Jourdain Kearney. September 27th, so 2 days ago, and this is in The Hill. Oh, nice little graphic article or added there. Okay. Oh, looks like they're on a tropical beach. That's so pretty. Here, let's get rid of that. All right. Senate Republicans on Monday evening blocked a measure to fund the government and suspend the debt ceiling, carrying through on their threat to not deliver votes for a Democratic measure to raise the government's borrowing limit. Okay. That, folks, is pure propaganda. That's not true. Senate Republicans actually they did block a measure to not fund the government because they're funding the government all the time. They blocked a measure of economic treason, of economic suicide, blocked a measure that would actually maintain the debt ceiling. Okay, that's what they're doing. That's a good thing. And it says through a threat not to deliver votes for a Democrat measure to raise the government's borrowing limit. Okay, so this is what they do. They spend the money, then they have to borrow more to cover their spending. Total tally, 50, 60 votes were needed to advance the measure. So I explained why they did the right thing for the wrong reason in the first hour. If you missed it, after the first hour. No Republicans voted for the legislation. The setback is the latest in a slow-motion brawl over how to fund the government and deal with the debt ceiling, which kicked back in on August 1st with the Treasury Department using, quote, extraordinary measures since then to keep the government solvent. Okay, this is all lie. I mean, it's interesting to read this, but basically no one considers – gee, help me out here. I'm trying to understand why nobody – and I do mean nobody – no media source, nobody in Congress, nobody in the other parts of government, you know, none of the great pundits out there, the writers, the independent folks, the journalists, anybody, foundations, the conservative organizations like Heritage, nobody is saying cut the damn spending. Are they all in on it? Are they all making money off this? Gene, what do you think's going on? Because I'm honestly, I'm at a loss. I do not understand that whether it's not, other than Peter Schiff in his little quote, and he's not even talking about a solution. He doesn't even say cut spending. He just says they're not paying the bills. Okay, but not a single person is saying cut spending, cut your obligations, live within the debt ceiling, actually make it a debt ceiling, and then start lowering the debt ceiling and lowering your spending. Not a single voice out there is saying that I've heard besides me. If you can find one, great. I can't. Why is it so universal that nobody even talks about cutting spending? Got an idea for me? If you're working on something, okay.
Well, I can't say, but could it be because they're just lackadaisical and they just think this is how it always is and whatever. But you would think with all the new people that have been elected recently that they would stand up more and say, no, this is irresponsible. You know, the rhinos and the people that have been there forever, you know, they're so deep entrenched that, you know, I you know, we talk about what I did before about people getting kickbacks or getting things for their constituents and stuff like that. There's a reason why those guys have voted for it. There's something in the pie for them. It's just not, they're just not raising it just to raise it. They're getting something out of it.
I guess they have to be. It's like Catholic Charities. You know, they're all making money. And because they're all making money, they don't care. And they figure that let's just keep making money as long as they can. And when the economy crashes, they'll blame other people. Oh, my bad. Or you're bad.
And they don't have to worry about it because they don't have to pay like we have to pay. You know, they get their health insurance for life. They don't have to pay or make it their retirement for life. They don't have to, you know, their salary, which is a joke. I think if you're voted out of office, your salary ends. They should not be getting any more salary. When we lose a job, we don't get a salary. Why do they?
We get a severance from when we're being severed. And even that's not much, yeah. There's like a little package, yeah. I don't know if they still get their salary, but they get a pension after only serving.
Yeah, they get a
term.
Pension, exactly. And that's
you get a pension. So you serve 2 years. Hey, Gene, do you think we should run for Congress, serve for 2 years, and take the money? What do you think?
I mean, you get health care for life. How sad is that? They don't even get our Obamacare.
Yeah.
They ruined our health care system, and they don't even have the same one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Paul Ryan and them to thank for that because they could have got rid of Obamacare, and they did.
Well, you had to get rid of Paul Ryan first, Paul Rhino. So Paul Rhino was running the House to make sure that Republicans didn't do anything Republican, and he was very good at it. Something I was going to say here a minute ago. If you get a chance, if you want to put yourself on hold for a second. There's two sites I think we should look up and see if there's any objection to what's going on. One is USA Watchdog, USA Watchdog with Greg Hunter. And the second one, I've forgotten what it is. I think it's either Citizens for Limited Taxation or something. It's Grover Norquist's organization. He's the one that has the No New Taxes pledge. So Grover Norquist, I think Citizens for Limited Taxation, and Greg Hunter, USA Watchdog. Can you check those, please, for me real quick and see if they have anything on actually cutting spending, reducing the obligations, maintaining the debt ceiling, or anything positive in terms of you know, our fiscal policy, or are they hell-bent on economic suicide like everybody else seems to be? So there we go. I'm going to let Jean do that. So she'll come back in a bit. In fact, if anybody else wants to do that, feel free. And so that would be a great thing to look at. And a bunch of other stuff too. Don't worry. I've got vaccine news, and I still have the rest of the economic the Arizona audit. So we're not at a loss for stuff. In fact, anybody wants to join us, I'm guessing Dave can't join us this morning from Santa Rosa Volunteers. And that's okay. He's busy. I'll check Facebook later. And then find out if I have a message or a text coming in. So I got Facebook, I got text, I got the show, I got Gene. All this stuff's happening at once. It's very exciting around here. All right, I've had enough of that article. It's boring. So let's get to, I've got two articles on inflation to try and explain what's going on here. One of these is from a website called Wolf Street. That's Wolf as in the dog, you know, Wolf, W-O-L-F, Wolf Street. And of course, the article is written by Wolf Richter. And it's probably Wolfgang Richter. Yeah, I says from his German. So that's kind of cool. So Wolf Richter, obviously, Mr. Richter, I want to have you on the show. I think this will be kind of cool because you know your stuff. July 15, 2021. He says, the title of the article, "This Temporary Inflation is Turning into an Inflation Spiral." Do you folks remember how often they talked about Janet Yellen and the Fed and all these people that were propping up the Democratic economies? They always do that. The Fed always lowers interest rates during a Democrat administration or insurrection in this case, or they raise interest rates to put the brakes on the economy during a Republican administration to make them look bad. So they prop up the Democrats like Obama and Biden, and they try to destroy the economy of the Republicans, you know, like Trump, you know, and Bush economy. I don't know. He was so much of a globalist. I don't think he was part of the gangs. I don't think they did it there. Anyway, he says, get used to higher inflation. My thoughts on the biggest mess I've seen in decades. And Wolf Richter, let's see if I can get you a background on who he is. Let me scroll to the bottom here and get the byline. The byline means who it's by. Okay, that's what they call the byline. Wolf Street. Okay, he's got a thing here. He doesn't say who he is. Yeah, that's okay. Let's see if he knows his stuff. I'll go by his information alone. He says, this year, inflation blasted off with a vengeance, and the last 4 months have seen the hottest pace of inflation since the 1980s. It's probably the 1970s. I think he's slightly in error then, because the 80s were a time of de-inflation. In fact, deflation was coming down. Those were the Ronald Reagan years when we had the tax cuts and the budget cuts, and that's when the economy took off, much like it did under Trump with tax cuts and budget cuts, much like it did under Kennedy with tax cuts and budget cuts, much like it did under Coolidge and gave us the Roaring Twenties. Okay, that's how it works. You cut the budget and you cut taxes, and the economy takes off. I mean, that's happened so many times. That's not even debatable. Okay. Anyway, he says the consumer price index, the CPI, rose 5% a year over year for May. Okay. So we talked about that before. Consumer price index is another way of saying inflation. The June reading will come out in a couple of days, if that's already happened. Came in at 5.4%. 5% of annual inflation is bad enough, but the pace of inflation over the past 4 months has been much higher, clocking in at over 8%. Annualized. So Jane was asking about that before, and she said, well, I think it might be more than 5%. Yeah, it is, because things are more expensive. They've gone up more than 5%. Yeah, some things, I think timber is up by 20% or something like that. Anyway, so over 8% annualized, which I guess means over the course of the year. So if you get inflation at 10%, that means for your dollar, it's only worth 90 cents. Your $100 is only worth $90. Your $1,000 is only worth $900. Your $1 million is only worth $900,000. So if you have 10% inflation, your $1 million has cost you $100,000 of it in purchasing power. Think about that if you don't think inflation is a big deal. Back to the article. Surely some inflation measures will tick down in the near future, giving everyone false hopes before rising again. The first bout of inflation always looks temporary. Yeah, that's why they keep saying, oh, it's only temporary. You know, good news, rose-colored glasses, yeah, pay no attention, go with the shiny objects, you know, Trump's a bad guy, you know, you're all racist, you know, don't worry about inflation, you know how this works, right? Anyway, the first bout of inflation, you know, but during those first bout of inflation, that's when the triggers of what they call persistent inflation, namely the inflationary mindset and inflation expectations, are being unleashed, okay? See, a lot of this is psychological. People don't take into account enough the psychological components of the economy, so let's do that. Article says, so now the Fed keeps repeating time after time that this is temporary and that it will go away on its own because it was caused by temporary factors, namely a demand shock that occurred because the government spread $5 trillion. Let me say that again, $5 trillion in borrowed, as in approaching the debt ceiling, as in borrowed stimulus money since March of last year. Emphasis mine. And because the Fed printed $4 trillion, the Fed printed $4 trillion one more time. The Fed printed $4 trillion over the same period and repressed interest rates to 0%. Repressed interest rates to 0%. Why would they do that? To make Biden look better, to make him look like he has an economy. So they're printing money, they're causing inflation, they're putting interest rates down to try and get some kind of growth, or make the economy look like it's growing, or not have a further restriction on the economy. Because if you raise interest rates, people don't spend as much. But if they don't spend as much, there's less economic activity. Well, if there's less economic activity, that's called a recession. Okay, so the worst thing maybe they could have is higher interest rates and a recession at the same time. You've heard of stagflation? That's a stagnant economy plus inflation. Okay. If you raise the interest rate, this is what happened during the Carter years. Okay. I know, I was there. One of the benefits of age. So that if you raise the interest rates and you stop the economy, you put the brakes on the economy so that it stagnates and you have rampant inflation, you know, which is constantly rising prices with no ability to produce enough to make the money to cover the rising prices, you've got a problem. And that's why interest rates are up around 20% during the Carter years. He says, back to our article, this moolah stimulated consumption in a huge way. Consumption, that's spending, okay? It caused a historic spike in demand for goods, and there are now cascading shortages from ammo to semiconductors, made worse by container shortages and transportation bottlenecks. Now, this is back in July. What's happening in Los Angeles right now? The Port of Los Angeles, Long Beach, has some 60 ships sitting off the port that can't unload. Why? Because there's no infrastructure. There's no workers. There's no truck drivers. There's no containers. Okay? This is all Biden. This is all from Biden. None of this happened during the Trump administration. It's all because of the Biden insurrection. Okay? So if you want to know what happens when you reverse everything Trump did, now you see what it looks like. Okay? This is just one of many things that are happening because what Trump did was right. And it made America great. Therefore, reversing that is what Biden's doing, and it's making America suck, quite frankly. We suck right now. We do. We suck. Okay? We can be great, but we're not, because we've got an insurrectionist in the White House, and we suck. And we can make that better, but we got to get rid of them. We have to get these audits going. We have to take away the Biden electors. They have to be decertified. They have to be decertified in Arizona, in Georgia, and in Pennsylvania. And at that point, he's below 270. He's out of there. He has no leg to stand on. There is no, there is not enough electors to have him, you know, maintain the presidency illegally. Nice, huh? Back to the article. But the fiscal and monetary stimuli are still ongoing. The government and the feds still have to have their foot fully on the accelerator. In other words, the borrowing. This is what this debt ceiling thing is all about. Okay, but you got to go to the source because everybody else is lying to you. All right, there are all kinds of temporary problems. This is back to the article. There are all kinds of temporary problems that are causing price spikes here and there. The supply chain bottlenecks, the difficulties companies have in hiring people because they're being paid not to work, right? The shortages, the various spikes in commodities, you know, timber would be the example, all right? And, energy, oil, gasoline's going up. And the price increases in services that have nothing to do with any of the shortages. Contractors and professional service providers are raising their fees, can do it suddenly and get away with it and not lose business. Well, there you go. So they'll raise prices when they can. That's what happens in a market economy. You know, if they can raise prices, they do. Okay. That's all. It all contributes to inflation. All right. And back to the article. And these price increases are now balling up. Companies are raising prices. Companies and consumers are paying those higher prices, and companies are paying higher wages while the government is stimulating demand with deficit spending. In other words, you know, making the deficit larger. We've been over that all through this show. And the Fed is stimulating demand with money printing and 0% interest rates. And here's the key. And no one is resisting the price increases anymore. Well, we are. Okay. Give me a million listeners and I'll change the country. Just that simple, folks. Give me a million listeners. I'll change the country. So everybody else here at Action Radio. We will impose freedom by showing the federal government that these are the laws we want to be governed by, not the ones that they have now. Okay? That's ultimately where we're going with this. All right? Back to the article. And so much cash has been created and handed out that price doesn't even matter anymore. People are paying whatever, even for discretionary purchases that they don't have to buy, such as cars. Most people could easily wait a couple of years instead of buying a car now. But now the whole mindset has changed and they want to buy now, no matter what the price. That to me is incredibly stupid, but you know, anyway, and he says, and this change in mindset caused used vehicle prices to surge by over 30%. He says, I've never seen anything even close to this. And I've been around when inflation ravaged the economy in the late 1970s and early 1980s until the Volcker Fed, that's Chairman Paul Volcker. All right. He was the hero of the Fed back in the Reagan days. Fed finally cracked down on it, triggering very rough double-digit recession that eventually knocked the wind out of inflation. Okay, so it's kind of ironic that you have to put the brakes on the economy to stop this inflationary spiral, stop the prices going wild, and recession means a slow economic activity. So what's the Biden Fed doing? They're just the opposite. They're printing money and they're keeping interest rates at zero. Now they'll raise them if Trump comes back in. You watch. If Trump, you know, is in before the 2022 midterms, the first thing the Fed's going to do is raise interest rates to 1 or 2%, putting the brakes on the economy to make his recovery stop. That's how this game is played. That's why you have to get rid of the Fed. They're pure politics. Okay. almost done with the article. So now we have these price spikes canceling, cascading from product to product and from service to service. This surge of inflation is becoming ingrained in the inflation expectations of company decision makers and consumers alike, and they're adjusting to it. And in this manner, inflation becomes persistent. So in other words, there's a mindset here. What he's explaining is that y'all getting used to the higher prices. You know, rather than curtail your driving to help lower the demand for gasoline, you're buying it at the higher price. Okay. Now, I understand that a lot of gasoline purchases are not, you know, discretionary. You have to do it. You have to go to work. If you have a business, you have a cab company, you have to buy gasoline. If you're a trucker, you know, you've got to buy diesel. Okay, I understand that. But, you know, if you want to help the situation, you know, don't buy that car right now. I hate to say that, but, you know, hold your purchases off. You know, cause a voluntary recession that will slow down the economy so this inflation goes away. If you want to lower prices, you have to slow economic activity. Because as long as the economic activity continues at the rate that it's going, you know, inflation is going to continue. And that's just how this works. All right. Even economists are now getting the message. According to a Wall Street Journal poll of those economists, their average forecast for the end of next year in terms of core inflation, which excludes food and energy, why not, has risen to 3.2%. He says, but they're using the lowest lowball inflation measure available in the U.S., namely the core PCE inflation measure that the Fed uses as its target and that normally runs far lower than the standard CPI that is cited in the news media. Okay, this core PCE inflation measure, the lowest lowball measure of the land, well, March, April, and May, combined produced an annualized core PCE inflation rate of 6.4%. Well, that's higher than the 5% we were told. Wait a minute. Meaning that if price increases continue for 12 months, at the pace of those 3 months, the annual inflation rate will be 6.4%, which is over three times the Fed's target of 2%. Now, I'm going to stop this article now because it keeps going on. But here's a question for you. Why do we have a target of 2%? Why is losing 2% of your money a good thing? Well, you have to understand how the Fed works and who they serve. The Fed is a private central bank that makes money for their stockholders, their investors. And who's invested in the Fed? Well, I guess all the people that are in bonds and treasuries and everything else and that own the banks that the Fed, you know, gives money to. I'm not sure how it all works, but I know that the Fed makes money by taking 2% of your money each year. So they figure I call it the parasite rate. So in other words, they take 2% of your money, all right? And they take that 2% and it goes to them because they're transferring money. Because if you want to buy things, you know, and you make loans. Say you want to make a new car loan, okay? Well, that new car is going to cost you 2% more. Well, where's that 2% money going to go? Well, it's going to go to the people you're borrowing the money to buy the car from, which means that ultimately it's going to go to the Fed and their bank, okay? So inflation is really a transfer of your money to them, right? And to that regard, it sucks, okay? Anybody wants me to go in this article? I can, but it's rather long. But it gets you the message, and I want to cover the current U.S. inflation rate. I want to see if Gene's back. I think I might play something again here too. We need another a break at this particular point. So what can I say for you? I don't have an economic. I should have an economic thing, but I don't. Let me play you one of my earlier pieces here, the Sedition Act of 1798. So sedition, that's you know, talking against your government. That's what all the people are accused of in the D.C. jail. So let me play this, and since we are kind of on our own here this morning, and give Gene a chance to come back to us and tell us what's happening. So I'll play this for you back in about 7 minutes. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. This week, I want to break from the Federalist and Anti-Federalist papers to consider one of the many aberrations in the early days of the land of the free. That is the Sedition Act of 1798. Granted, this is always grouped with the companion bills on aliens, but I see them as separate issues. Why would a new government formed from colonies under rules of sedition from a foreign monarch bring about that same tyranny into our government so early in its existence? The Constitution was ratified on September 17, 1787. The Bill of Rights was ratified on December 15, 1791. So it was already in the supreme law of the land that Congress could make no law that abridged the freedom of speech, thus making any subordinate law on sedition unconstitutional automatically. And yet, it happened. All power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Therefore, if you have a government of good laws and yet bad officials who crave the preservation of power more than the alleged guarantees of freedom, freedom takes second place. You can see that in evidence throughout the entire government response to a coronavirus that would have run its course naturally in about 10 weeks, just like the flu every year, and would have been gone by the summer of 2020 when all viruses fade until the winter. And yet, look at the massive amount of power taken from the people in a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Sedition is defined in my online dictionary as conduct or speech inciting people to rebel against the authority of a state or monarch. So what did the government put into a law that so obviously came from the former ruler of the colonies into the new government of the United States? The Sedition Act is titled An Act for the Punishment of Certain Crimes Against the United States. In other words, conduct or speech that criticizes the government. Where have we heard that before? Section 1 of the Sedition Act reads, "Be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America, in Congress assembled, that if any persons shall unlawfully combine or conspire together with intent to oppose any measure or measures of the government of the United States, which are or shall be directed by proper authority, or to impede the operation of any law of the United States, or to intimidate or prevent any person holding a place or office in or under the government of the United States from undertaking, performing, or executing his trust or duty, and if any person or persons with intent as aforesaid shall counsel, advise, or attempt to procure any insurrection, riot, unlawful assembly, or combination, whether such conspiracy, threatening, counsel, advice, or attempt shall have the proposed effect or not, he or they shall be deemed guilty of a high misdemeanor." This, of course, violates the entire First Amendment, except with regard to religion. It gets worse. Section 2 says in part, "And be it further enacted, that if any person shall write, print, utter, or publish, or shall cause or procure to be written, printed, uttered, or published, or shall knowingly and willingly assist or aid in writing, printing, uttering, or publishing any false, scandalous, and malicious writing or writings against the government of the United States, or either House of the Congress of the United States, or of the President of the United States, with intent to defame the said government, or either House of the said Congress, or the said President, or to bring them, or either of them, into contempt or disrepute, or to excite against them, or either or any of them, the hatred of the good people of the United States." In other words, saying anything against the government of the United States or anyone in it is a crime punishable by jail and fines. This effectively creates political prisoners in the United States, much like the innocent people in the D.C. Gulag jail for being in the Capitol building January 6th. If that were not bad enough, within the Sedition Act is probably the most dangerous provision to individual liberty that I have yet seen in the founding documents, and provides a shocking precursor to the future neutralization of our jury system and the supremacy of the government courts over the people. Section 3. "And be it further enacted and declared that if any person shall be prosecuted under this act for the writing or publishing any libel aforesaid, it shall be lawful for the defendant upon the trial of the cause to give an evidence in his defense, the truth of the matter contained in publication charged as a libel, and the jury who shall try the cause shall have a right to determine the law and the facts under the direction of the court, as in other cases." The key words here are "under the direction of the court." The whole point of a jury is to not only determine the guilt of the defendant, the restitution in a civil case, but most important for the jury is to determine whether the laws implied are fair, just, constitutional, and are not arbitrary and capricious reservoirs of unlimited government power over the people. Jurors can do whatever they want because they are the representatives of the people over the judges who work for the government, and therefore work for the people. And yet, as virtually every judge instructs their juries, that they can only judge the facts of the case and not the law. That lie is repeated every day in courts all across the country. And now I see where it came from. Section 3 is really saying that the juries, and therefore the people, are under the direction of the court. What the Sedition Act really does is makes criticism of the government a crime and allows government judges to direct the juries that would hear any case under this act, thus destroying the right of free speech and to redress grievances against the government and to due process and the right to a jury trial of one's peers. One could imagine anyone charged under this act would be guilty until proven innocent, and then ruined by government if they were proved innocent. Can you think of any parallels to the rights of free speech today? The Sedition Act was approved July 14, 1798, signed by John Adams, President of the United States. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it.
Action Radio. Dangerously cool.
All right, we're back. And, you know, I love these pieces. I have a fascinating time with them. Again, if you want to hear any of them, you can go to our YouTube channel. That's Action Radio-Founding Moments. So Action Radio-Founding Moments will get you. I've made 17 of these so far. And so I'm going to go through all the Federalist Papers, all the Anti-Federalist Papers. I'm going to get back to the Constitution. I haven't started on the Constitution yet. Articles of Confederation, Mayflower Compact, the Treaty of New York. And that was with the Indian tribes. That was just one of those trees. It didn't quite last as long as it should have. So anyway, all these things we're going to get to, but this is a multi-year project, which is great because I don't plan on going anywhere for a while. I'll be behind this microphone for my Yeti Blue microphone for you know, hopefully a couple of decades to come. Let's get back to Jean. Jean has a story she wanted to present, and I have just one more thing to do on inflation, and then we'll get into elections and vaccines and all that kind of stuff. But let's get to Jean. You have a story for us?
Well, first I just wanted to say I haven't been able to find any real information about what you were talking about on the site.
That's a story in itself.
It's got a lot of older information, but yeah.
Okay.
What I was wondering or what caught my attention yesterday, for those of you, I don't know how many are following, excuse me, but the Stuart Scheller case, and for those of you that don't know, he was the serviceman that went on. I saw him on Facebook, and he basically said that someone should be held accountable about what happened in Afghanistan. And I read something this morning that now he was put in jail for doing that. He was taken out of the military and stuff like that. And I know
on what charge?
Yes.
What were they charging with?
I don't even know. I didn't look at what he was charged with. But
okay.
The thing is, I know as a military person, you're not supposed to, you know, speak ill about the military and stuff like that. But it's such a double standard as far as, and even in the video that he did a while back, what caused him to get into this trouble was the fact that, you know, people are court-martialed and other things happen for lesser crimes. And then, or lesser things. And then, you know, why is it that there, I mean, there's always a scapegoat. Well, I say there's always a scapegoat, but in this case, there's not a scapegoat because what happened in Afghanistan, I mean, they're having the hearings now and yesterday, what a debacle that was. Miley, it's like, oh my God, my thinking is, incompetence. And I don't know how he could, I don't know if it's really that way because I don't see how he could have gotten to be that ranking up in the military to be so incompetent. But it's like, oh my gosh, why is it that only certain people are held accountable? Why is it that only certain people, what they have to say makes a difference, because if someone else says it, it's like they're wrong, or, you know, they just need to be good little sheep and follow behind. But to me, when he spoke up, I was like, yes, thank you, because someone should be held responsible, or at least find out what went on, really what went on. We're never going to know, because supposedly Biden says, oh, he wasn't told to leave troops there. Well, everybody else is saying, yes, he was told to leave troops there. But my thinking is, what do you guys think? Should he have been? I mean, should he be charged with something? Because he did. I mean, obviously they know they're not supposed to speak out and say negative stuff about the government, the military, and stuff like that when you're in the military. I get that. But yet it's like, I don't know. I just find it's just disheartening, because once again, it's like, it just matters who you are.
Now, you got some good points there. It's the way I understand it, the military operates, they don't operate in the Constitution. You don't have the same constitutional rights in the military. You don't have the right of free speech in the sense that you can scream and yell and complain against your country and, you know, give away secrets and things like that. There are secrecy acts, and there's all kinds of stuff that you can't do. And rightly so, because you're in the military, you know, you're in the chain of command, you're serving, you're defending the country, and you have a lawful orders to obey. The question is, what happens when you get an unlawful order? And just because General Milley says everything that happened in Afghanistan were lawful orders doesn't make them lawful orders, okay? This is where military folks get into trouble. And so a court-martial is, you know, the way that a lot of these things are handled. So if you going to court-martial, well, I found this as you were talking at military.com. What is a military court-martial? So this is from the military themselves. 30th of July, 2021, so this year, Jim Abscher says, a court-martial is a legal proceeding for military members that is similar to a civilian court trial. It is usually reserved for serious criminal offenses like felonies. For less serious criminal offenses or breaches of military decorum, I guess that's what this guy comes under, breaches of military decorum. Well, what's that? You know, so that's interesting. And regulations, a non-judicial punishment, NJP, is usually held. NJP is known by different terms among services such as Article 15, office hours, or captain's mass. The Uniform Code of Military Justice provides for three different types of court-martial. Okay, so these forms, I'm not going to read them all today, but these forms of court-martial differ in the type of offenses they consider, the makeup of the judge and jury, and the punishments they can mete out. So you got summary court-martial, you got special court-martial, and you got general court-martial. So I'll post this in the Action Radio group so people get a chance to take a look. It says, be aware and get what you're entitled to. Keep up with all legal benefits available to you as a service member, veteran, or spouse, to get updates delivered straight to your inbox by subscribing to military.com. So isn't that interesting? They have the whole service for you here. So that's what it is. It's basically, it's the equivalent of a civilian trial. And so that'll give you an idea of where they can go with it. But of course, it's different because this Uniform Code of Military Justice is what service folks are being judged by, not constitutional rights and civilian law. And they sign those rights away when they join the military. So, but the question is, how much is political? Yeah.
And the thing is with this guy, he was in the military for, 18 years? So he basically only had a couple more years and he could retire. He gave all that up. And so the reason I say this, what was going on or what happened must have hit his heartstrings so much to do something like that, because it's not something they would normally otherwise do. And I could be totally wrong, but that's what I believe. And the thing is, when you consider what these guys were doing, they left people behind that helped them for years, were helping them, and just left them behind. I mean, how can a government in any good standing, good faith, do something like that?
And that's easy.
To listen to what some of Millie said yesterday, I just, oh my God, I was so appalled. It was like, he's just the biggest schmuck, because he fits right in with this administration is all I'm going to say.
Yeah. Yeah, so we should call him General Schmuck Millie. That's a good name for him.
And he's not going to resign, because you don't have to resign if the president doesn't agree with you. But yet you went behind Trump's back and called China.
The cure for him is not resignation; it's arrest. It's arrest. He deserves a court martial for what he did with China. You know, and how does he? I thought about this morning. How does he know that President Trump didn't want China to think we might go to war with them? See, you don't know. You know, and it's not up to him to judge that. That's not his position to make China feel good, okay, because he wants to, because he doesn't like what Trump's doing. That is not his position. So you want to talk about going outside the chain of command and you know, issuing your own orders to yourself and completely disobeying the commander? Yeah, that's what deserves a court-martial. He deserves a court-martial, okay, for what he did.
Pelosi should be held accountable, too, because she stuck her nose in there, too, and she shouldn't have. You know,
right, exactly.
She should not be doing that stuff. That is way out of her scope of practice or out of her role as what she does in government.
Yep. So see, that would be a great investigation. That'd be a great investigation. And, well, here's the thing. General Milquetoast, so I'm calling Millie these days. So General Milquetoast is going to be before the House Armed Services Committee today. He was before the Senate yesterday. And so he'll lie to the House like he lied to the Senate. He's just basically a liar. But the idea that... you know, well, here's the thing, and I got Josie in line too, so I'm going to get to her in just a second. The idea that, and I'm not familiar with the case of the person who mentioned Stephen Schiller. I'm not familiar with that. Stuart Schiller. I don't know about his case, but that'd be something interesting to explore more. If you want to do more reporting on that, feel free. That'd be a good thing for us to know. But the thing is, if you put yourself in his place, I assume he was in Afghanistan. He probably had friends killed there or injured there. He probably, you know, left early when they all left, probably left behind people that saved his life any number of times, Afghan translators, helpers, things like that. And all of a sudden, here he is back here. And so he thinks, should I shut up for 2 years and get my pension and be a total hypocrite? Or should I honor my oath to the Constitution and speak up? See, the thing about the military is these are the people that do speak up. When they take an oath to support and defend the Constitution, they don't say to themselves, I take this oath, you know, just for the time I'm in the military. Once I've retired, hey, I could be a Marxist. I could do what I want. They don't say that. You know, I've talked to more military people that say, I took an oath for life. Okay. So I understand somebody giving up their pension if they believe sincerely in what they're doing and they can't live with the fact that they've lost people for what now appears no reason. Because of Obama's policies, and this is what it all comes down to. Obama wants Muslims in this country. That's why they closed Bagram, because Bagram, the military guarded Bagram. Okay, they couldn't get 100,000 Afghanis into the Bagram airport, so they had to give it away. So I believe in the purposeful theory, not the incompetent theory. They're not incompetent. This is all by design. So they let Bagram go, so that all the Afghanis will come to Karzai Airport, which was guarded by the Taliban, because the Taliban had. You know, had Kabul at that point. So they all raced there. It's just an amazing coincidence. No one seems to be wondering why 100,000 Afghanis were able to race onto our airplanes while Americans were left behind. That doesn't happen by accident, all right? And the thing is, the Taliban have been gradually taking over the country anyway. So a year ago, they had nothing. They had no provincial capitals. They had no provinces. They had, you know, pretty much no territory. They were fairly suppressed. But over the course of, well, gee, I don't know, most of the Biden insurrection, they seemed to gain a whole bunch of power. And they got more and more of Afghanistan. And I bet you there's an Obama, you know, plot behind that to basically give the Taliban most of Afghanistan, you know, before we left. And then to say that it only happened a few days ahead of time, as General Milquetoast is saying, that's preposterous. Nobody believes that. You know, I don't even think his staff believes that. But, you know, the problem with Biden is that he's the perfect foil for Obama to say and do whatever he wants. And Biden, you just tell him how to lie and he lies, but he doesn't even think it's a lie. He thinks it's the truth. So you can't accuse him of lying because he doesn't understand what lying is. You know, you talk about a mental moron up there who has no concept of what he's doing, will say whatever he's told to say. And then he'll say, well, my folks won't let me answer questions. I have to go now. Well, what kind of a president says that? You know, what the leader of the free world says that his handlers won't let him answer questions. That way, you know, he's not president right there. Let's bring on Josie because I think she had a related thing. Well, actually, tell you what, Jean, did you have a follow-up comment into what I said? Then I'll get to Josie. Did you want to?
That's good. Yeah.
Okay. Because I think Josie relates to what we're talking about here. Josie, welcome back to the show. Josie is our Latino
reporter. Good morning.
Reporter.
Only a retarded president will not answer questions and being guided like a puppet by the criminals. But anyway,
yep.
this military, I'm sure he has plenty of dirt of what happened in Afghanistan. That's why they arrested him. The family cannot even make a phone call. They cannot get a hold of them at all. They're not allowed to talk to him. They have him in consignment, solitary consignment, whatever you call it. So this guy, they're probably going to kill him. Oh, yeah. They're probably going to kill him because he has a lot of dirt on these people.
How do you know he has a lot of dirt? Where what was his position? Where did he get access to? What did he do? Do you know this person?
I'm not sure.
Stuart Scheller. I've never heard of him.
Well, the thing is, he was in Afghanistan. He was there, and they said that one of the people he was close with died, and I think that's what stirred up a lot of this. But yeah, he's in confinement in what is it, North Carolina, Court Lejeune or Camp Lejeune or something like that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So he knows a lot. He knows a lot to expose these people, and that's why they arrested him. And his family cannot have no contact at all with him. And he's all by himself in a jail cell. This is unheard of. And I don't hear none of our Republicans coming forward, or we should be protesting in front of Nancy Pelosi's house or Obama's house, because the one behind this whole thing is Obama.
Yep. Well, the Geldings won't do that because they support... They support the insurrection. The Geldings won't come to our aid. The GOP
and
Geldings,
right.
Don't count on them. They didn't even do anything with the California recall election, which is pure mail fraud. I mean, mail-in voting is mail fraud voting. And so they didn't do a thing about that. So I wouldn't expect them to do anything about this situation because they're in on it.
So we should not have no more election until the one from 2020 gets fixed, period.
Yep.
We
agreed.
Should stop all elections, put them on hold, and fix what the problem that we have with all the criminal crooked ones.
Well,
and now they're forcing our military to get the vaccine. People are panicking. I got a text yesterday from one of my friends, and her son-in-law is being forced. He only has like 10 days to either receive the vaccine or he's going to go to jail. Like I was telling you yesterday, you know, I called you about it. But you know, the video that I sent you, this military is fighting, this official, he's fighting the military because he said that the vaccine that was approved by the FDA, it is not even in the country. So
no, it hasn't been made yet. See, that's the big myth. The one that they approved.
2023.
The one that they approved, they're not making. They're still selling their old stuff. In fact, there's a report that the VA was giving expired COVID vaccines to veterans. What a surprise, right? Because it was cheaper, probably.
So it's all So they continue the fraud, and we need to call into the military leaders and put them in jail, arrest the military leaders right at this moment, because they're all in it with this fraud. They're making and forcing our military. I just sent that video from this gentleman that he's with lawyers and everything to Japan. Mm-hmm. We have a friend from Nigeria, American, that he's over there and he's freaking out because he refuses the vaccine. And they told him, you have to make a decision or you're going to go to jail.
We talked about this. Let's get folks caught up here. I don't think that they can send them to jail. I know the House passed the defense authorization bill. I think I might have given you wrong information yesterday. The House passed the authorization bill, which says which has in it a clause that the military cannot use dishonorable discharges, and they certainly can't arrest people, you know, that don't take the vaccine. Okay, so that's a different thing. But as I understand, the Senate hasn't passed it yet. So just because the House passes, it doesn't mean it's going to work. So let me see if I can find.
That's why they're threatening them. And this mom, she's panicking, sending me, what do I do? Asking for my advice. It says the military is no religious exempt for military and this kid has a friend facing a court martial for refusing a verbal order. My co-worker's son I'm trying to read here in the dark. But anyway, they're panicking the young men, and the young men don't know any better, so they have to cave in. And I don't think this is right what they're doing to our children, vaccinating them with this poison, killer vaccine, which this vaccine will kill 80% of our military, and that's their agenda. To wipe out, and meanwhile they're bringing all the terrorists and the cartels, MS-13, Haitians, there's a lot of criminals coming in, Greg, and they're not allowed to get the vaccine at all, only the little kids, because the little kids for America are useless right now for the criminals. That's what Castro did in 1980. He got rid of all the eight people in jail contaminated with AIDS, 80, 90-year-old, and little kids, sent them in a boat to Miami because they were useless to Castro. And this is what Biden is doing. He's vaccinating all the little kids coming in, but not the adults, because he needs the adults. So we're going to be fighting them, I believe. That's the agenda. That's why they left behind our military, and they're bringing thousands of terrorists, Muslims from Afghanistan. They're not women with little kids in their arms. It's a lie. They only show a few, but it's not true. And this gentleman in jail, he probably has a lot to tell us, and that's why they arrested him. These people are criminals, and we're paying these criminals to attack us, to hurt us. You know, it's a disgrace what we are allowing for them to do, and we need to stop this. I'm thinking to go to the military base early in the morning, since I have to open my store at 10. I'll probably go early in the morning tomorrow and in person go put a complaint. And I know some other head honchos, military in our church, that I'm going to reach first. I know one of them, and I told him about the vaccine, and he goes, I disagree that they should not be forcing our young military people into having this vaccine.
She'll come on the show anonymously. You know, I'd love to get that on the record, because I know military people can't have, you know, like that.
I'll ask him today.
Yeah. Here's the problem, though, and I know Gene has a comment for you as well, but the problem is that it's not a lawful order. So just because General Milktoast says that it's lawful, and just because Biden proclaims it from his, you know, perch on high, that he can mandate things, none of that is true. Even though the military is under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, you still have your basic human rights. One of the most basic rights is to your own body. Now, I know they sign away and they get vaccinations, but this isn't a vaccination. So if I were a good military... If I were a good military, if I were a JAG, you know, Judge Adjutant General, if I was a military lawyer defending these people, I would say that I would prove, first of all, that it's not a vaccine. Secondly, that it's dangerous because of all the spike proteins. Thirdly, that the more people that are vaccinated in the military, the sicker they're all going to get, because of the vaccine injured are going to be shedding the spike proteins and infecting the DNA normal people. Okay. So, and you can prove this scientifically. I mean, this has already been established. Also, the fact that the variants come from those who are vaccine injured. They're the ones that are creating the variants. There were no variants before the vaccine came out in December of last year.
You're right.
You know, so in fact, the reason you didn't hear a lot about COVID from like August through November was because it was pretty much gone. The hospitals were empty. You know, the herd immunity had already taken over. In fact, it took over really in July. So July through November, nothing happened. But as soon as they rolled out those, those messenger RNA spike protein infusions, you know, shortly after that, on January 6th, Brian Sicknick died of a stroke, actually two strokes. What a surprise. Guess who got the vaccine? Guess who got the mRNA shots first? Capitol Hill Police.
So
do you think that's a coincidence?
So
no.
Mom.
I think he died of a messenger RNA shot, personally.
The vaccine.
Yeah, I think
so
I killed him. You can't say that.
She had a stroke and died.
Mm-hmm.
My mom's cousin got a stroke and died from the vaccine, and her daughter was, we buried her 3 months later from blood clots in her head.
Yeah.
So, and my husband's friend, he had open heart surgery with full of blood clots in his heart. So, and right now we have a lady in our Sunday school class. I believe she has a lot of blood clots in one of her legs. And she said, I don't know what it is. I said, I know what it is.
Yeah, I know what it is. Yeah, and I had open heart surgery. I never thought about that because I had a mitral valve prolapse, and they had to trim one of my valves, which actually is working extremely well. I was in the gym yesterday. Yes! Thanks, surgeons and God. You know, here I am.
But you know, Greg,
what?
Where are the judges? Where are all these people to stop this killing of innocent Americans? I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. They're
That's
killing
a good
them
question.
All.
I don't know.
I had a mass
psychosis.
I had a
go ahead.
I had a black young 19-year-old girl yesterday. She was in tears crying. We prayed. I put my hand where she just got the vaccine a few days ago, the second one. 19 years old, vaccinated, and she's already having problems. 19 years old. And
There's fertility problems, too.
She was afraid, and they...
Especially for
she
women.
She was afraid, she said. and she was convinced to get the vaccine. And I was sad. I was crying together with her yesterday because she's only a little girl, 19 years old. What is going on? And then I
had
another
parents?
She said,
you know, where were her parents? Or I mean, where were the people that should be helping her? I mean, just because she's in the military at 19. 19-year-olds are kids. I mean, they take them that young in the military because they can be influenced.
But some people are happy with it. I know someone on Facebook, her son's got the vaccine last week, and she celebrated.
Oh, God, what a
sick
person.
They're stupid. And then I had another nurse. She said, I just vaccinated my 17 and my 23-year-old children. I said, what? And I started talking to her girlfriend while she was shopping, and then all of a sudden she's like, and she's, at first she was again talking to us about it, oh, but the vaccine is good for us, blah, 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 blah. And then when I was talking to her friend while she's shopping, she kind of like changed her tune, and they asked me to, for me to send a bunch of videos to them, which I do. And I mean, I'm full time, let me tell you, running my store and trying to reach so many people, and it is very tough. But what I was asking you a little bit ago, where are, you know how, you know before how the judges were stopping Donald Trump from bringing all these people from the Middle East? And, I mean, they were stopping him for every little thing. Where are they? Where are our good judges standing up for the life for our military? Said no more killing. And it's, even Fox last night, I never watch Fox anymore, but last night I put it on, and they're kind of, they're agreeing with the vaccine. They're still in another world. I don't know. It's just upsetting.
And the thing is, if it's only select people that have to get the vaccine, but the Postal Service doesn't. The people that work for the White House don't. It's like, why does the military, why do medical professionals? That don't make any sense. And I don't know if you guys seen this, and I don't know if it's true, but I watched it quite a few times when Whitmer, or whoever the governor of Michigan, her and her daughter
Whitmer,
got the vaccine.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you saw that when her daughter got it, and they showed it like 15 times. It was fake because when they supposedly put the needle in, the syringe moved. Well, the syringe can't move if it's in your body.
Did
you
know, see that on was that a video, or where'd you see
yes.
that?
Yes, it was a video.
So Witch Widmer, that's not her real first name, but we call her Witch Widmer around here, the governor of Michigan. So she got a fake vaccine
Witch
or her daughter Mark. Did? I want to get clear.
Well, they said her and her daughter both did, but in the daughter, when you look at the daughter's vaccine, they were like, watch what happens. The needle moves. And they showed it, and they put it in slow motion, and they showed it. It moved. And they showed that the needles that they used were retractable. So they didn't get no vaccine.
Yeah, see, this is the thing that's going on, too.
And even if they show a needle in their arm, it's saline. None of these crooked criminals, Democrats, are getting the real vaccine. Okay,
yep.
Don't believe that. It's all a lie. They want whoever they want dead with this vaccine, and these vaccines are deadly. Why do you – I was telling that nurse yesterday, let me ask you a question, and she didn't know what to say. Because she's with the vaccine. I said, well, wait. I said, let me ask you, why do you think a lot of the doctors from Sacred Heart are leaving? And so is RNs, physician assistant, and a lot of doctors from Baptist hospitals are walking out too, because I believe Baptist is going to be next, mandating the vaccines. And she really didn't know what to say. And I said, why did the president from Haiti was murdered because of the vaccine? So she didn't have a lot of answers. I don't know.
So it was an African country,
there
too.
There is something that I don't know.
President, I think Uganda, or one of the countries, was also murdered. Haiti. Wasn't the Haitian president murdered for not and he opposed the mandatory vaccines?
It's a total of five presidents from other countries, yeah.
Yeah.
Tried to kill the president from Colombia, too, because right now kind of like China's running the country a little bit in Colombia.
And he was
about to take off. My friend that lives with me from Colombia was telling me, and they started shooting at the plane up in the air, and other fighters defended him. But this is ugly. A lot of countries are involved in all this thing, And we need to stand, and we need to talk to our leaders here, and nobody's doing anything at all. Sacred Heart should be shut down completely. I want to try to find out if that woman died at the COVID unit, the one that she, that her kidneys were shutting down, you know, and they refused to help her with ivermectin. So I'm going to try to find out about her.
And this is somebody that you know personally, or is someone in the news or what? Who are we talking about?
Well, one
and you don't
of
have
the
to mention names.
Taking care of her, she was telling us about it.
Oh, okay, oh, okay, yeah, let's find out. Yeah, here's the thing: Sacred Heart and the other hospitals, Baptist and the other hospitals here and all over the country. I have a theory, and I want to run this by you, Josie. That that if enough of these people quit, and I've got stories from Natural News, which of course I can't publish on Facebook, but Natural News, one of my go-to websites. There's some 70,000. I think law enforcement officers that are threatening to quit across the country because of this. There's our medical staff. I'll get the article. But with all these people that are willing to give up their jobs to maintain their health, which is a good thing, I personally think this is going to be totally blown out sometime in the next year or two. And these people are going to get their jobs, but they're going to get their jobs back. See, everybody thinks that when you lose your job, it's permanent. It's not. You know, the people that went to Canada and avoided the draft for Vietnam because they didn't want to die for a stupid reason. You know, they were pardoned.
Yeah.
Jimmy Carter pardoned them all and they all came back. And, you know, despite what you think of them, I mean, I may have done that myself. I don't know. I was never in that position, but being a Canadian, I certainly could have. Has gone back to Canada legally. I could go back for any reason I wanted, but, this is one of the nice things about, having another citizenship. But the thing is that this is not permanent. Nothing is ever permanent. Well, maybe the aircraft controller is being fired, but I think if they dumped the union, they could get hired again. So I think a lot of those folks came back. So this is not a permanent situation. If you lose your job as a police officer or as a first responder or as a teacher or as a health worker,
you're going to get it back.
You're going to get your job back because they can't function without you. They can't get rid of half their workforce, you know, and function.
And
they know that, but it's a bluff. There's a big bluff going on.
Greg,
what do you think?
That's what I told my military friend in Japan at the moment. Don't worry. As soon as Donald Trump comes, all the military will be back into their positions, the ones that are not dead, of course. So I've been encouraging him, and he made a decision. He's going to stand not to take the vaccine, even if he gets thrown out of the military or whatever happens. So I've been communicating every day with him from here to Japan, and other people are reaching to me right now also. So keep me in your prayers, because I know Satan is attacking.
As I understand it, the House passed the Defense Authorization Bill, which included a provision that you cannot, first of all, you can't arrest. You certainly can't do that, but you can't send out the military folks on a dishonorable discharge if they refuse a vaccine. You can't. I mean, a messenger RNA protein spike infusion. I got to find a quicker name for that. But you can't. You can't do a dishonorable discharge. You have to give an honorable, or at least a general. So, however, I don't even know if they have general discharges anymore. But you have to do that. You can't just get rid of them. And if it's honorable, of course, you can go back. I know many people that serve in the military, you know, get in the civilian world and decide they want to go back to the military 2 or 3 years later. And the military is like, hey, you served. Come on back. So the idea that people are leaving now permanently, especially the kids should get out. And of course, if they get out under an honorable discharge, you know, then they're perfectly welcome to come back after we solve this crisis and people start realizing more and more, because we're going to get a critical mass of people that were either killed or injured from vaccine injury, that it's going to get through the country. So the people are talking to themselves right now. The media is not covering it. It should, but it's not. And so I think we're going to get to that critical mass when enough people quit. You know, you have to ask yourself, the powers that be, even the deep state has to ask itself, if all these folks are resisting, you know, what are they going to do? How can they push that when 30-40% of police or teachers or health workers are going to say, no, I'm not going to do this.
And you know, Greg, our children sign up. They put their life on the line for America. Mm-hmm. And we are trying to take their life right now by injecting them poison that is not even approved, and it's not even here yet until 2023.
Well, it is approved.
The vaccine that was approved is not even here yet.
Yeah.
Not even
here. Well, it doesn't make it safe.
Something is happening to my phone, Greg, so I'm going to hang up and continue listening, okay? Okay. It's making, well, thank you. I don't know, it's not clear.
Weird noises? Yeah, yeah. Hey, technical difficulties. Well, it might be the FBI. They don't want you to talk anymore, Josie. You never know.
All right, bye-bye.
See you later. Oh, my goodness. The thing, ciao. The things that we talk about here, it gets pretty crazy. But, yeah, Gina, you might be having a couple of phone problems, too, or computer problems. I understand. That keeps happening. All right. I want to do one quick thing on inflation, and then I'm going to get to our vaccine report. And then if we have some time, we'll get to the election report, too. But there's a chart. I found an article. This is called inflationdata.com. All right. And you want to check September 14th. So it's only a couple of weeks ago, by Tim McMahon. And it's inflationdata.com. And he said, what is the current inflation rate? I'm not going to read you the article. We covered that already. But they have this chart. They have this really cool chart. This is current annual inflation chart. And what's interesting, it starts back in 2010. Well, the inflation rate in 2010, the real one, not the limited one that we talked about, was about 2.7%. Okay. Now, here's what's interesting. They have what they call the period of deflation. Inflation actually went to 1% halfway through 2010. It kind of spiked up again in 2012 at 4%, but then we went through this big period of deflation. It actually got to negative. It was actually deflationary, negative inflation at 0.2% in April of 2015. Well, that's because the Obama economy sucked, but it actually was a good thing in terms of inflation. So the economy was so bad, people were so restrictive of their money, they weren't spending anything, that the prices had to drop to try and meet, you know, that lower demand, and we actually lowered prices. So deflation is a good thing. The bankers hate it because they don't make money, but we do. So deflation caused it to go to zero in 2015. Then it spiked back up again in February of 2017, 2.74%, and then it was 2.95 in July of 2018. January 2020, so the beginning of the election year, it took another big drop, and by May of 2020, it was 0.12. That would have been the lockdown economy, okay? So January 2020 is when we first discovered COVID. May of 2020, we were in the middle of the pandemic because April 5th, the pandemic ran from the end of January 2020 to July 4th, COVID Independence Day of 2020. That was it. You know, that was it. January to July. That was it. It was gone after that in terms of a pandemic. It was still around. It's always going to be around. But right after that, right after this low, as soon as looks like about mid 2020, it started picking up again. November 2020, 1.7%. And then, of course, as soon as the Biden insurrection takes over in 2021, inflation skyrockets from 1.68% in February to 5.39% in June. So that's 5 months, February, March, April, May, June, 4 months. So 4 months of Biden economics brought us to almost 5.5% inflation by June of 2021. That's how fast this changed. And that's all Democrat spending, Democrat borrowing, Democrat printing of money. And Republican geldings doing nothing, just to let you know. Gene, did you have a follow-up on what Josie was saying? Did you want to comment on that? And I know we had, I know we talked about some of the brain tumor aspects of the COVID shot as well. Anything you want to cover there?
I just think it's sad that we can't make a decision over our own body. And that's what this vaccine basically is boiling down to, that other people know what's best for us. No, only you know what's best for you, just like me. Only I know what's best for me. And it's like, I just think it's so sad. And the worst thing is the whole one world order and stuff like that. This is all just playing right into the hands of that. And I don't know. My heart goes out to people that need to get it and have to get it. I didn't get it. I don't want to get it, but that's my choice. I'm not going to tell someone else, no, absolutely not, don't get it. I mean, I will ask them about it, but it's their choice. No, I am not going to throw my values in their face. I can tell them why I believe what I believe, but it's ultimately their decision. Just otherwise, then I'm just a hypocrite because I don't want to be told what to do, but yet I'm going to go tell someone else what to do? No,
but you can recommend it. You can recommend and advise. That's what I do. In fact, we even have a PSA COVID vaccine,
right,
which
and
I play periodically.
Whatever decision you make, as long as you don't make it out of fear, you make it out of the best decision you can make, and then go on. But
yeah.
I just think it's very sad, very sad. And I think now, I think, what was it, October 1st or whenever, people were supposed to decide if they were going to get it. Yeah, so it'll be interesting, too, because so many hospitals, they say, we're at capacity. It's like, no, they're not at capacity. They're at, well, they're not at capacity bed-wise. They're at capacity staff-wise. They have enough, they have the amount of beds they have to do with the staff they have. They don't have enough staff to have more beds open. And so if you're getting rid of so many nurses or doctors, and you can say, oh, well, we got travelers. We got people that are willing to work for $1,500 a shift. You know what? How long is that going to last before you get burnt out or you get sick? And then what are they going to do? Because usually the people that make the decisions, and what I've experienced, not too many people in leadership roles, and this is nursing, this is anybody, do you actually see those people on the floor actually answering a call, like giving medicine? Every once in a while, you have some really good staff, you know, managers that will do that. For the most part, they run from that type of stuff. And so what are they going to do once they don't have the staff to cover the shift?
That's
and
a good question.
Also, you're letting go of these people that are qualified. A lot of them are extremely qualified, and you're bringing in new people that don't know the system that needs to be trained. How many errors are going to be made just because we're human? And sometimes things get missed through the cracks. Then what are we going to do? Is someone going to be held accountable then?
You know, I mean, I can't ask these questions, but they're all very good questions. I think that, you know, the managers, the ones that are passing on these mandates, they're probably not even doctors. They probably have no clue with what they're doing. They're just following orders that they think from the corporate managers who think they're sucking up to the current insurrection and the CDC, or they think that they have to follow the guidelines. We have our own mayor of Milton, Heather Lindsay, who said, who is infamous for saying on my show, I'm just following the chain of command. And I'm like, well, what chain of command is that? You know, she's like the state surgeon general, the governor, and the CDC. Well, I said the CDC issues guidelines. They're not a regulatory agency. They have no power. You don't have to follow anything they say. They're just recommendations, you know. And so in that respect, but they're all following in lockstep because they think they're doing the right thing. They're following the science. Well, if you really follow the science, as I made a Facebook post earlier, you'd fire all the people that got vaccine injured because they're shedding spike proteins. They're making everybody else sick, and they're creating the mutations, you know, the variants, which we used to call mutations, you know. And so what they're doing is just the opposite. It's anti-science. That's the weird part about this. Yeah. Is the anti-science is they're keeping the people who are vaccine injured, and they're getting rid of the people who are DNA normal. I mean, that makes no sense. If you're following the science tells you just the opposite. So let me play my PSA. And I do advise people not to get it, and I'll stand by that. In fact, I stand by all my bold and brave statements. So here it is. I'll be right back.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. You've all heard those ads for people who have suffered medical or health tragedies, which say you may be entitled to compensation. But if you have suffered injuries or crippling diseases or medical procedures that went horribly wrong, it's not the compensation you need. It's the knowledge you should have had before the condition you suffer from now. So that you are never in that position in the future, I strongly recommend that you do not get any COVID vaccines. Get informed. Do your own research. For 99.97% of Americans, your natural immunity will give you, at worst, only moderate symptoms of COVID. If you've already had COVID, it's virtually impossible to get it again. There are effective cures for COVID, which will get you completely over the virus. There is no cure for the COVID-19 vaccines. Once you start down the road of DNA modification, there is no going back.
So that's what I think about it. Okay. Gene, do you have any comments of anything you want to talk about? And, of course, anybody else is welcome to call us. This is open discussion time we've got for the 41 minutes that remain of our show today. So 215-383-3832. That number is always post right in front of you there on your page. We also have the live chat going. I don't know. Live chat works, and I mentioned that earlier, that you go up to the top. I think it's the top left corner. Well, let's find out. Let me see if I can do it myself. At the risk of losing my own show, I'm going to pull up a website and see what my show looks like to you. So, Gene, if you want to, if something happens, you've got the rest of the show. so let's see what it looks like to you guys. I've got my webpage. And here we go. Action Radio. I got my the thinker in the corner. I got the follow button. I don't see there's the live button. I guess you can click on that. Let's see what happens when I click on that. If I get feedback, I'll have to cancel it immediately. Oh, there I am. 40 minutes remaining. Okay. Okay. So there's the live show. I don't see a button where it says live chat or start a live chat. Oh, live chat. There it is down below. Okay. Sign in to chat with the host. Okay. So there you go. All right. So now I know. So if you scroll down from the thinker past all my many tags, go by the schedule, you get past an ad that shouldn't be there. This is start here. That's not the show, by the way. That's a private ad for something else. And see where it says live chat. And if you get to live chat, down the bottom of live chat, it says sign in to live chat with the host. That would be me. And so there you go. And of course, you'll talk to Gene first. But that's how that works. So live chat is available. Anybody live? If we check live chat lately, let's see if we got live chat. Oh, we got people. Hey, guess who's there? Bumperjack. Bumperjack's there. Oh, make my day. He says the founding moment stuff is kind of boring. So you think our founding is boring? You think the documents that make this country great is boring? You think that trying to understand what makes America America is boring? You're too bored. Okay, well, fine, he's bored. Well, that's one person's opinion. And as you know, I kind of like my funny moments. A lot of other folks do. All right, let's get into what's going on. This is let's call this the not ready for Facebook, you know, vaccine report. And Gene, you know, feel free, like I say, hop in at any time here. Anybody else wants to call in? Yeah, it'll be great. At least, we got the, let's see what's going on live chat. All right, so this is Natural News. Natural News is Mike Adams, and he writes all kinds of stuff that is automatically banned on social media. You cannot share this. So that's why I talk about it here. You know, screw you guys out there in big tech. Okay, so this is New York initiates medical martial law rollout with troops to take over hospitals where unvaxxed healthcare workers are being fired en masse. And this is September 28th, so this is yesterday. All right, and they got a bypass sensor link. I tried it. It doesn't bypass the sensors. Natural News. The medial martial law takeover, M-E-D-I-A-L, I'm not sure what that means, medial martial law takeover of society has begun in New York, where Governor Kathy Hochul has announced the mass firing of unvaccinated, what we call DNA normal, healthcare workers to be replaced by foreign workers and National Guard troops. That alone is disgusting. Okay, so are these National Guard medics? I mean, what exactly are these people doing? He says the same pattern of replacing civilian workers with military troops will be replicated across law enforcement, paramedics, firefighters, truck drivers, factory workers, and other sectors of the economy that are rapidly collapsing due to COVID lockdown restrictions. The upshot is that we are witnessing a fast-moving military takeover of society under the cover of, quote, state of emergency, following personnel shortages that are actually caused by the government's own policies. Okay, so this is where I disagree with Josie, and she may or may not call back, but we've had this discussion before that she says that, you know, Trump has 800 military people. They're going to there were going to be military tribunals. You know, the military is going to, you know, take over and put Trump back in power. You don't want that. Okay, you can't fix dictatorship by installing another dictatorship. You do not want a military dictatorship. Remember, all power corrupts. Do you want General Milquetoast running the country? I mean, that's what you're going to get. Okay, so no, I don't want the military taking over. I don't want the military doing civilian jobs ever. Military is supposed to do military jobs. Put them on the border. You know, all these people that are going to replace our workers, they should be on the border.
Gene, I hope they have military healthcare workers there. Can you imagine going to the hospital and you have someone in a military uniform and they don't even know what's going on?
I mean,
you know,
well, that was
it's
my
interesting
point.
Because people couldn't wait for Cuomo to get out of there. But it's like, watch what you wish for, because my friend up there, before he was even out, said she's even worse than he is. And look what
much
it's
worse.
Turning out to be. Yeah,
yep.
She was spot on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's exactly right. Be careful what you wish for. This is why I'm not a big fan of recalls. Because if you know, unless you have an election and a recall, but if you just replace somebody, this is what you get. And now she's basically declaring martial law, which she has no power to do. But she's a Democrat.
Exactly.
And this is, and here's the thing, though. Now,
she's
maybe
not
this is
a medical person.
This is, but this is just my perception. Tell me if I'm wrong here, that it seems like the Democrat women are even more Marxist, draconian, power hungry, and willing to declare emergencies than the Democrat guys. The guy governor's doing it too, but I'm just saying, you look at Rich Widmer, and you look at even our mayor here, and you look at some of the folks, and you look at the new governor of New York, and different people in different places. Yeah, you've got Dr. Fascist. He's a guy, and there's a bunch of guys there. But it seems to me that the Democrat women are even more, in many cases, authoritarian and draconian than the guys. You look at the woman that replaced Cuomo. She's terrible. Now, is that my perception, or do you see a pattern forming that that women feel more empowered to be even more Marxist than the guys?
Well, I just wonder too, if you give someone a little power, look what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
But how sad, because they're running by incompetence.
Yeah, I don't want somebody that is an aircraft mechanic, you know, giving injections and you know, doing anesthesia, things like that. You know, it's not a relatable skill. So, yeah, I assume they're going to be healthcare workers. If you have a chance, if you can dash onto the internet again, I'd be curious how much of the military is medically trained. I don't know if you find an article. I would just do a quick search and see, you know, percentage of medically trained personnel in the military. Or just pick the Air Force or Army or Navy. Just pick one of the services and maybe do it. I'd be curious, because if they're taking people from the military, you know, and where they should be, medical people, well, of course, we don't have the war in Afghanistan anymore, so the medical people probably don't have as much to do. Huh. Let me go on this article. The only reason hospitals in New York are desperately short of healthcare workers, of course, is because corrupt government leaders made sure all the unvaxxed, or as I say, DNA normal workers, were fired. These are the same workers who survived 2020 without COVID vaccines, working on the front lines of the spike protein plandemic, yet now they're being dumped onto the streets because they won't take a vaccine in 2021. Well, why are you vaccinating people, or why are you infusing spike proteins and calling it a vaccine in 2021 when the pandemic ended in 2020? That doesn't make any sense either. This is why I know this is a marketing campaign, okay? You don't vaccinate for something that's already passed you by. You don't vaccinate for something that's gone. You don't vaccinate for something that has a 99% at plus, you know, not just survival rate, but you know, effectiveness. COVID is less than, you know, is like 0.05% effective or lethal. Okay, that's a hell of a small percentage to try and, you know, give people a shot from something that nobody knows what's going to happen with it, unless of course you just make money, as is Dr. Fascist, the genocidal psychopathic drug pusher, as are the rest of Big Pharma. It's Big Government Pharma. That's what it is, Big Government Pharma. They're all making money. I just found out the CEO of Pfizer, the one that wouldn't take the vaccine himself, you know, that couldn't go to Israel because he wouldn't take the vaccine. He got a $21 million bonus this year. $21 million bonus. That's on top of how many millions he makes per year now. $21 million bonus. He got more money in a bonus than most people will ever make in their lifetime times 10. Israel, by the way, let's talk about Israel. Israel is the most vaccine-injured country in the world and also has the highest COVID rate. African countries, which have chloroquine for malaria, ivermectin for parasites, have the lowest COVID rates in the world and are the least vaccine-injured. Coincidence? I don't think so. I think it's a perfectly logical extension of what's going on. So Israel and the African nations prove that the more people that get this spike protein infusion, the lower their health, the worse their health. And they're talking about mass injuries and deaths because of this. And sooner or later, someone's going to have to wake up those in power. You know, it's interesting that, Gene, have you noticed that no politician, prominent politician, has died of COVID?
Yeah, interesting. Yeah.
You know? And the people that I'm pretty sure died of COVID earlier on, Hank Aaron, the baseball star, he got the shot. Larry King, talk show host, he was dead 3 weeks after getting the shot. And Marvin Hagler, the boxer. So those are celebrities I know. But you'll notice no celebrities are reporting being sick. Well, the one who is reported being sick is Eric Clapton. Eric Clapton got such horrible reaction to the second shot. He got the first shot, and then he was talked into getting the second shot, that he won't give a concert if the concert discriminates against DNA normal people. He won't even give the concert, and he's powerful enough to do that. So that's fascinating. That you don't hear a lot about that. He even wrote a song about the situation. But yeah, he will not give a concert if they require vaccine passports. So it's starting. But I think the reason that no prominent politician has been injured or killed from the COVID shot is because they're not getting it. Okay. Trudeau. In another video, like when Gene was talking about a video with retracted needles, I had a video too that, of course, I can't share, but it's on Rumble, you know, which talked about Trudeau, and they videotaped Trudeau getting the shot. And Gene, you know how injections are given. You have to landmark the area, and you have to, if it's in a muscle, you have to squeeze the muscle, you know, to make the shot. And you look at the Trudeau vaccines. Go to Rumble and look up Trudeau vaccine. You know, she just kind of does it one hand and just kind of aims it in. And then with his wife, Trudeau's wife, I don't even know if she waited for the, she didn't even wait for the bandage. She just got the retracted needle, you know, threw her shirt over it and stepped down. Okay. So that to me is fascinating too. But Gene, when you give an injection, did you ever give injections? Are you trained for that or no?
No, I don't.
Okay. But you know how it's done, right? Or do you know how? What, do you know the procedure?
Yeah.
Okay. So they have to landmark the spot. I'm not sure what that means exactly. Maybe you can explain it. And they have to cup the muscle. When you ever see someone getting a real vaccine, they squeeze the arm to sort of make the arm muscle bulge up a bit. Right? Do you know why they do that?
No. I think sometimes maybe it'd be just to loosen up the area before they actually put it in there.
Okay. All right, well, I'm going to ask, we have Gene Adams is coming back tomorrow with the Medical Freedom Report. So we had Lita yesterday, who gave an incredible discussion. I still do the show notes, so I'll document the times that she was on so people can listen to that. Tomorrow's our first new – we had Jane on last week, but she was so good, I asked her to come on every week and give a Medical Freedom Report. We're going to talk about this. I'll find out exactly – because she's a nurse. I'll find out exactly how injections are given. Okay, anyway, so let's talk about the article still. This is the only reason – oh, I already talked about that too. Governor Kathy Hochul, yeah, Dictator Hochul, said Saturday she's prepared to declare a state of emergency if the state vaccine mandate for the healthcare industry results in an unmanageable shortage of workers when the rule goes into effect Monday. So think about that. So they're mandating something that they can't mandate. Now they're going to declare a state of emergency over their mandate, you know, and they're bringing military troops to take over civilian jobs. Now, if a union, if the military took over a union job, they'd be called scabs. Okay. This is why I think healthcare workers have to unionize. And we talked about that earlier on the show. I know this is not a pro-union area, but I don't care. You know, the Teamsters, and I've talked to them, the Teamsters have a health care division. All you nurses and doctors and medical staff that don't want to, you know, get a spike protein infusion, my suggestion is join the Teamsters. But also find out if they're going to support you before you do that. But that's an option, unionize. Or form your own damn union. Make up your own union. Healthcare Workers of America. Form a union, and in the process of unionizing, you can't be fired. National Labor Relations Law says you can't do that. If you're in a union certification process, you can't be fired. So form a union. That's a way to fight back against this. Another way that we're using is we're all becoming ministers here. So if everybody becomes a minister, you can write your own religious exemption. The idea is that they're not taking
them. Unfortunately, now with the religious exemption, some places aren't even reading them. They're just denying them.
Right. Well, they can't do that. Then you take them to court. Then you say, I'm sorry, you can't deny this. This is a religious exemption. This is what a religious exemption means. And you show them Article 1, show them the Bill of Rights, the First Amendment. First Amendment, which says very clearly, Congress shall make no law establishing a religion. And I would say that this whole vaccine is a cult religion. They worship at the God of Fauci, you know, and they're creating a situation where this is actually a religion. But the key parts of the First Amendment, the first part, everybody knows, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, which means religious exemptions. The free exercise of your religion cannot be denied. It is a constitutional right. And the 14th Amendment grants that right to you under privileges and immunities and equal protection. So very simply, if you are freely exercising a religion under the First Amendment and under the 14th Amendment, where it says, no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States. One of those privileges and immunities is the First Amendment. You know, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, you're being deprived of liberty if you have a vaccine mandate, or property without due process of law, and it's certainly not due process of law to do that because I've already proved it's unconstitutional by the First Amendment, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. So in other words, you can't discriminate between vaccine injured and DNA normal, because everybody gets equal protection of the laws. You can't make laws for one group and not for another group. Okay? You can't do it. So the First and 14th Amendment makes all these vaccine mandates and states of emergency illegal. And again, the option is leave your job. Leave your job. Okay. Is that hard to do? Yes. Is it, people have trained for years for these jobs, but I think they're going to come back. I talked about it with Josie. Gene, what do you think? Health profession, because you're in it. If 40% of the people leave and it's impossible for these health organizations to carry on their job, what are they going to do? They can't train all those new people. They can't replace with military. Are they going to fight the mandates maybe? When do you think you'll see the light on that?
You know, the thing is, I can't see, well, put it like New York. They aren't going to say, oh, we changed our minds. You don't need to have the vaccine. No, you know why? Because that means they have to swallow their pride. They aren't going to do that.
Back to the article. Governor Kathy Hochul said Saturday that she is prepared to declare a state of emergency if the state's mandate for healthcare industry results in an unimaginable shortage of workers. I went over that. New York is also announcing the use of National Guard troops and a federal takeover of local healthcare. And this is reported by WSKJ. WSKJ reports the state is also considering activating medically trained members of the National Guard to fill in gaps in the healthcare workforce. So at least they're getting medically trained people, all right? And we could work with the federal government to bring in teams of medical workers to help local healthcare facilities. This is the opening phase of the medical martial law takeover of America. That's what I think what they meant to say up top. Medical martial law takeover of America. And if it's not stopped, it risks quickly morphing into increasingly totalitarian maneuvers by the regime. Okay. Now, this is the point where it gets into areas I'm not sure about. I want to see more evidence, more proof. But this is what they're saying. So Mike Adams of Natural News says we have to watch out for military vaccine checkpoints on roadways and highways. Military troops running food and fuel deliveries, controlling critical infrastructure. The weaponization of food, gasoline, medical supplies, and other critical items, restricting them from red states that refuse to push mandatory vaccines. That's what happened with monoclonal antibodies. Remember when Biden restricted the supply of monoclonal antibodies to Florida and Texas? Okay, that's already happened. Okay, so I agree with them there, certainly. Military troops involuntarily extracting people from their homes at gunpoint and taking them to COVID death camps run by the CDC. Nah, not there yet. But it's possible, because anything's possible. But I think the restrictions, if you can't go to a store without a quote, vaccine passport, you can't buy food. If you can't buy food, you starve. Okay, unless you have a farm or unless you go out hunting, you know, hunt the urban deer. That may happen, you know, because people are going to, this is the line in the sand. This is the most critical decision of our time. That's kind of an interesting choice of words. To surrender and have your body invaded by a spike protein infusion that you, if you don't know before, you will know after, causes blood clots, damage to your organs, strokes, paralysis, brain tumors and other tumors, I'm sure, and death. That's what this does. And it sheds spike protein to other people. So if parents get it, they're going to give it to their kids. If parents force kids to get it, the kids might shed spike protein to the parents. That's how this stuff works. And nobody's really, only a few people are really calling out the line. We are. That's what we're talking about here. See if I can find
it. I just want to tell you, I got an article here, and this is according to 2019. There were 73,454 active duty enlisted medical across the Army, Navy, Air Force.
Could I have that number again, please?
73,454.
Okay, so the military has over 1.5 million active duty people. So that's about what, 6 or 7%, maybe 6%? Rough math there. That's not a lot.
No, and especially when you consider some of those people are already working in like VA systems and stuff like that. So They aren't going to be able to go to like New York and help them. And can you imagine how many nurses, doctors, medical people in the city hospitals that this is going to affect?
Mm-hmm. Well, that, which raises my next question. If you can look up how many healthcare workers there are in the United States, ballpark figure, and then we'll compare the 73,000 military medical workers with the total healthcare, and then we'll do a quick extraction on our calculators. If 40% of them leave their jobs because they don't want the vaccine, you know, what's the difference between the military medical personnel if every military person was put in the healthcare workers and the healthcare workers that are leaving? So, yeah, if you come up with a figure, just let me know. I want to hear the bell, too. So feel free to ping the bell.
But that healthcare is still the largest U.S. employer.
Oh. How many?
It doesn't say. It just says it's the largest employer. I'm looking.
Healthcare is the largest employer in America?
That makes sense, yes.
Wow. Okay, well, you know, so we're talking millions then.
Okay, it millions. Says with 20, this is according to 2018 Census Bureau.
Okay, right.
With 20 million employees.
Oh, that's a whole lot bigger than 70,000, isn't it? So 20 million employees, if 40% of them are leaving, that's 8 million. And they're going to replace 8 million with 70,000? And they can't spare all the military healthcare workers, because the military, those healthcare workers help just the regular duty military, right? They're not all in combat duty.
Right.
This is going to, so I think we've proven that this is a stupid idea, that the correct idea is to stop the stupid mandates, let the healthcare workers work, let them do their jobs, and keep the military where they're supposed to be, in the military. I mean, that's the easy solution. But no, they want to push the mandate. So it's either the psychological power, they're exercising power, or they're making money, or both. I think everything comes down to power or money. So the question is, how much power and how much money is involved? That we need to find out. Ethan Huff. Tuesday, September 28th, 2021, so that was yesterday, in Natural News, the source I can't post on social media, says economic terrorism. Italy tells companies to stop paying, quote, unvaccinated workers. See, you thought they were just going to say you can't go to an Eric Clapton concert. No, they're not doing that. And then they're going to probably have food carts and ration carts and vaccine passports to go shop. So they're going to starve you out. They're not going to let you buy gasoline. And now they're not going to pay you. Think about that for a second. Think about a government so powerful they can tell companies not to pay you. Let's see if Biden tries that here. That would be interesting. The article says, Ethan Huff says, to help save lives, the government of Italy has issued a decree ordering all employers, both in the public and private sectors. Oh, the government workers. They're not paying the government workers either. Oh, that's funny. Let's see how this goes over in Italy. All right. To stop paying workers who refuse to take Wuhan coronavirus COVID-19 vaccines. Quote on vaccines. In order to keep their jobs, Italians are now being told they must get a vaccination green pass. Yeah, there's your Green New Deal, right? Proving that they took the Operation Warp Speed injections in obedience to the government and the Vatican. What's the Vatican got to do with this? Well, I'll find out. I'll click on that in just a second. Since millions of Italians are just saying no to experimental drugs from Big Pharma, there could very soon be a massive worker shortage across Italy, or at least a massive shortage of people willing to work for no pay. Yet, this is funny. It would be illegal, it turns out, for the government to simply order the firing of all, quote, unvaccinated or unvaccine injured workers to avoid potential legal action. The government of Italy is instead demanding that employers just stop paying their non-jabbed employees. Right? Instead, they should be considered to be on an unjustified absence and have their wages or salaries withheld. And that explains Ken Macon, writing for Reclaim the Net. Quote, those found to be working without a vaccine passport could be punished with fines of up to 1,500 euros. That's about, what, $3,000-$4,000? Right? Additionally, the government said it would not cater for the test costs for those who would prefer not to take the vaccine. Huh. Next headline. Even the naturally immune are being forced to take at least one vaccine dose as a show of compliance. Okay, now we're getting to this. Now we're getting to this here. And so let me see if I can do something here. I want to check Gene. Gene, are you on phone now? And do you need me to make your line live, or are you able to make yourself live?
Yeah, I'm live. Yeah, can you hear me?
I can. Yes, I hear you just fine. Are you able to make yourself live? Do you still have the studio screen, or are you?
Okay. My phone keeps going, or my computer access keeps going in and out. So,
okay.
But there is Bumper Jack has some information or some questions on the
Let's
chat.
Go to one live is, chat.
Yeah, look. One is Trump's not coming back during this term. That's
well, now how does he know that? Biden's in the middle of an ongoing investigation. You know, the audit proved that there's massive vote fraud in Arizona. Proved it by several cases, several presenters looking at, I think like five different aspects of the election proved that Arizona is a complete fraud. So they have to decertify the Biden electoral votes because they could not have been given all the fraud. Okay, so if
right.
Trump, of course Trump's coming back this term. What a stupid comment. Sorry, Bumper Jack. Think about it.
If
Georgia, Pennsylvania, and Arizona decertify their electors, Biden falls below 270, and 270 electors is required to be president. That's how he's going to come back. That's how it's going to get interesting. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's possible. Okay.
Right.
Jean?
Yes. Anything is possible. And then the next one is, were y'all getting the vaccination causes DNA changes? The spike proteins never enter the nucleus and only produce your own spike proteins to produce antibodies and T cells.
Where am I getting the vaccination causes DNA changes? Because it's messenger RNA. That's what messenger RNA does. It makes DNA changes. Okay. The whole point of messenger RNA is to send DNA a message. Okay. How can it not change the DNA? Hello? The spike protein never entered the nucleus? No, that's right. The spike proteins are on the outside of the cell. But the problem with spike proteins is not getting them to enter the nucleus. The problem with spike proteins is they break off. So your body is making trillions of cells with spike proteins that break off into trillions more spike proteins. Those spike proteins get in your bloodstream. Those spike proteins, I'm not sure the mechanism, but the spike proteins cause red blood cells to clump together. That's what we call a blood clot. Okay? Those spike proteins are damaging every organ in your body, lungs, kidneys, brain, reproductive organs, all these things. They're finding blood clots all over people's bodies. You know, Josie, you know, who works, you know, near a hospital, as a store, you know, gets reports of this all the time. I mean, she's talking to people on the front lines. So of course it changes your DNA. And of course the spike proteins, you know, they produce antibodies and T cells. Here's what I know about that. And this is something we may have to do more research on to get Bumper Jack a better answer. But the immune system actually goes into a, what's called a cytokine storm. So what happens with all these spike proteins and with the antibodies is you actually end up producing too many antibodies. And your body thinks of your own body as the enemy. And somehow, this is what an autoimmune disease is. In other words, your immune system attacks you. And it becomes in the worst case, is a cytokine storm. And we need to do more research on that unless you know what it is. But it's where your own body, through inflammation and other problems, basically attacks itself, and that's what kills you. It's not the COVID virus that kills you. It's like AIDS. It's not the AIDS virus that kills you. It's all the diseases that the AIDS virus causes when it destroys your immune system, something that Dr. Fascist has a big hand in also. Anyway, Gene, do you know about that? Do you know about the antibodies, the autoimmune, and the cytokine storm? Can you describe that better, or should we do more research?
I would say probably need to do more research, yeah. I don't want to mislead someone. And then the last one is Larry King died of sepsis, and Baptist Hospital CEO said the only people in the hospital now are the unvaccinated. And I watched that video, and it didn't prove fraud. I'm not sure what he's talking about.
Well, if there was video.
I mean, if you believe that the only people in the hospital are unvaccinated, that is so not true. That is so not true.
And that doesn't make any sense. I mean, we've got that, you know, take a look at Israel. I've got a story here Israel, the most vaccinated country, is having the most COVID cases. And I guarantee you that the people in the hospitals are vaccinated. All right. So that's just nonsense. I mean, and they would say that too. You know, that's like when the CDC says the vaccine is tested, safe, and effective. Well, that's pure BS. It's obviously not, because we have all these problems. I'm not making these problems. And the fact that Larry King died of sepsis, how do you know? I mean, they say that COVID deaths are when someone, you know, runs a motorcycle into a tree. Or we had a murder couple last month. Well, they tested positive for COVID within 26 days. Their deaths were listed as COVID. So you can't trust any of these figures. Besides, Larry King, his family, he even said to his family, I think there's a quote somewhere, we'll probably look it up, but I think he said to his kids that he got the vaccine and he regrets it, and he was dead 3 weeks after the vaccine. So why would he suddenly get sepsis, which is blood poisoning? What makes sense? His body created millions of spike proteins in these cells from the messenger RNA, which changed his DNA, which clotted his blood, which killed him. That's not a big mystery or hard to explain. You know, it's like saying that Brian Sicknick, who they originally said hit by a fire extinguisher from rampant Trump people, you know, actually died of stroke, two blood clots. What causes the blood clots? The vaccine, folks. This is where it all comes back to. Everything comes back to the vaccine. All right. So thank you. Actually, Bumper Jack, I really appreciate you making your comments. It gives me something to refute and sharpens up anything I may have missed. But I'm going to write down here, cytokine storm. Dr. Judy Mikovits explained it pretty well. But I'm going to write down cytokine storm. And let's look up an inflammation. So that'll be for tomorrow's show. Inflammation. Actually, I don't take as many notes as I should. I've been kind of a little lax. I've been talking too much today. So here we go. Back to the article. And this article is, the one on economic terrorism. Italy tells companies to stop paying unvaccinated workers. September 28th, yesterday, author Ethan Huff. Not available on social media. He says, even the naturally immune are being forced to take at least one, quote, vaccine to show compliance, okay? And he says, what about people who already tested positive for the Wuhan flu in the past and who now have antibodies? That's natural immunity to the disease. They, too, will still have to get at least one injection, authorities say, okay? Now, here's the thing, too, about natural immunity, and this is what makes it so fascinating. The naturally immune that have already had COVID, and that includes me as far as I know. I haven't been officially tested, but, you know, I had all the symptoms back in January before we knew what COVID was, okay? And I haven't been sick since, and I don't wear a mask, you know, and I'm not taking a messenger RNA shot. So tell me I don't have natural immunity, because I've obviously been exposed to COVID. I know, because people have told me, I have COVID. Oh, that's nice. Yeah. And I don't care. Why don't I care? Because I have an immune system, okay? Because I already had it. Okay, obviously, and everybody's been exposed. Here's the thing, too. Everybody's been exposed to COVID. The whole nation's been exposed multiple times. Okay? You're being exposed again by people that are shedding spike proteins from their messenger RNA shots. Okay? You're being exposed to COVID all the time. Well, if we're being exposed to COVID all the time, and this was proven by there was a briefing to the Republican members of Congress, because they get separate briefings, from a vaccine official who used to be a public health official in the United States. I've got the article. He now works for a Japanese pharmaceutical. He said everybody's going to be exposed. Well, that's what herd immunity is. Okay, herd immunity is when everybody is exposed and doesn't get it. The people getting it now are the vaccinated, obviously, because before the vaccine, it pretty much had disappeared. Obviously. In fact, I got the CDC charts to prove that the death count was heading for zero as of early July 2020. You can't look them up anymore because they took them away. So I screenshot them. I still got them. All right. The reason for this is back to the article. The reason for this is that the Italian government wants everyone, regardless of immune status, to get injected with something as a show of solidarity and conformity with the dictate. I think that's what this is all about. We're all in this together. Groupthink. You have to prove your loyalty to the state by potentially damaging your health and possibly committing suicide by being forced to take something to prove you're one of the good people. I believe the term is virtue signaling. Back to the article. Beginning on September 1st, Italy also started requiring that schools and universities force their students and teachers to show proof of jab in order to get an education and keep their jobs. Don't people have the right to make a living? Don't people have, in this country, I think they actually have a right to an education, all right? And now you're saying you can't do it unless you get this spike protein infusion to prove your solidarity and conformity? That's no reason to get a medical procedure. All right. What if to show you conformity, all women had to get C-sections instead of give live, normal births? I mean, what's the difference? What's the difference from requiring all kinds of things? You know, female circumcision because guys get it. Well, conformity, show your solidarity. What's wrong with you? Okay. I mean, that's a bizarre example, but there are countries to do that, and it's disgusting. But what if they required everybody to, I don't know, make up something? What kind of bizarre thing are folks doing? What if you all had to get piercings? To show your solidarity, you have to have 15 piercings. I could go on like this all day, but the thing is, you can't, the whole, if you believe in the individual and the individual taking care of the individual and the individual responsible for the safety of the individual, then none of this stuff is even possible, acceptable, plausible, or legal. That's how it works. But they're doing it. This is groupthink. This is what happens with groupthink. Okay. You want to know psychologically what's going on? This is what's going on. The unvaccinated, as they are calling them, back to the article, are also prohibited from using public transportation. This means that many people will not be able to travel for the holidays or for work, and some may not be able to see their relatives ever again. This is what, quote, saving lives like in 2021. Depriving people of life and liberty is how the government is keeping everyone, quote, safe against Chinese germs. Without a jab in Italy, one can no longer buy, sell, or do pretty much anything. Quote, venues such as museums, stadiums, theaters, gyms, and indoor seating spaces at bars and restaurants all require vaccine identification, and businesses can be fined thousands of euros for not enforcing the rules. And that's from Zero Hedge. And I'll probably look up that article too. The Green Pass in Italy also tracks an individual's location. See, this is the other part that we haven't really talked about, that all these vaccine passports have tracking technology in them. They've got like a chip or something, all right? And once again, emphasizing how it's digital ID cards on steroids. Now, you can turn your location services on your phone off. If you use the GPS, obviously they track where you're going. So, you know, that's an acceptable, you make that concession if you use GPS. But if you don't want them to know where you're going, you turn off the GPS and turn off the locator services, and they don't track you, at least as far as I know. Okay? Huh. The Green Pass also tracks an individual location. Yeah, there you go. I read that. The ratchet will keep getting tightened until the people decide that they no longer want to be forcibly, quote, kept safe by the government. Once that happens, there will likely be incredible social turmoil, particularly in the West, where restrictions seem to be the most intense. Well, the communist countries are already restricted. You can't restrict them more. You know, they're already in a totalitarian society. He says, I didn't find the Zero Hedge article. It says there's going to be a breakdown across the West, wrote one of the commentators. The fusion of business and government is almost complete, wrote another. And I have to admit that our descent into fascism has been most educational. Okay, so that's what fascism is. Fascism is not right-wing, you know, people. Right-wingers are actually anarchists. The further you go to the right, you actually get into anarchy. Fascism is the fusion of business and government. That's why I call him Dr. Fascist. Anthony Fauci is the ultimate fascist, the ultimate fusion of business and government and education, because the universities are in on it too, okay? And big tech, all right? So there you go. So big tech is the business. Big pharma is the business. The universities are the education component, and Dr. Fascist represents the government component, okay? That is what we're living in, is fascism. So all these vaccine mandates and requirements and firings and the fact that they don't have to test them, and they say they're safe and effective when they're not, and all the propaganda and everything else. This is the purest expression of fascism I've ever seen. So when you wonder why I call him Dr. Fascist, there's a reason. I didn't do that lightly. All right. Almost some of this article. All that's left to determine is if it's survivable. And this responded another person. So these are the comments they're getting. Let me see if I can look up sources for this article, Zero Hedge, Natural News, and Reclaim the Net. Let's look them up too. I want to see what the Vatican said. We've only got about 3 minutes left. Gene, do you want to get into this? If not, that's okay. You're probably busy doing stuff. Oh, look what I found in the last 3 minutes of the show. Gene, yeah, go ahead.
I don't know. I was just going to say it's also interesting. And Bumper Jack's been writing some more, too, on there, saying that Larry King's wife said he died of sepsis. He had end-stage renal disease. It's like, yeah, he had a lot of things going on. You're right. But the thing is, it's like a lot of people, it's like my friend that had cancer, not too long after she had got the vaccines, her health really started to deteriorate. Is it a coincidence? Did it, you know, or nothing, just a fluke? Who knows? We'll never know. But he's writing a lot of stuff. The COVID vaccines cannot change your DNA. DNA is stored in the nucleus of your cells. Messenger RNA vaccines do their work outside of the nucleus in a space called the cytoplasm and have not been observed to interact with the nucleus. The cells break down and gets rid of the messenger RNA as soon as after it's finished using the instructions. And then,
oh, really?
Vaccines don't change DNA. Messenger RNA tells the cells to replicate. It doesn't send spike proteins through the body. The proteins leave the body after a few weeks. You know, the thing is, people can believe what they want, but I was watching something the other day, and it wasn't even, I don't even think, 2 days after this poor young girl got the second, I think it was the second shot, she could hardly walk.
Oh, and this is tennis.
It may not be what caused it, but it could be the deciding factor to to trigger something within the body, and then something else happens. But it's like this, these things are happening, and it's just not fluky that she got the vaccine and then she stopped being able to walk. Or that baby. Did you see the baby that they gave that shot to? I'm like, are you kidding me? Why are you giving an infant the vaccine? And he became paralyzed on ventilator and stuff. And it's like, are you kidding? Why would you give such a young child that? I don't know.
To show your conformity to the new order. I mean, it's sick, but that's what's going on. I mean, why do people do cult things? Why do parents, you know, why do they do stupid things with the kids? Who knows? Why are they send them to public schools? Who knows? Anyway, we got about 30 seconds. We're going to get into more of this. So the Vatican, the Pope has issued a decree that you can't go to the Vatican unless you've had the shot. Tennis Pro, this is from The Defender. This is Robert Francis Kennedy's magazine, part of his Children's Health Defense. He says, Tennis Pro says season is over after COVID vaccine injury. Okay? They got an NBA player who's not going to get it. But in the 10 seconds remaining, professional tennis player Jeremy Chardy, formerly ranked 25th in the world, said his 2021 season is over thanks to a series of problems he experienced after getting a COVID vaccine. He's 34 years old, received his Pfizer vaccine between the Olympics and the U.S. Open, where he was knocked out during the first round by Matteo Bird. Anyway, he says, since I had the vaccine, I have had a problem. I've had a series of struggles. Suddenly, I cannot train. I cannot play. I prefer to take more time to take care of myself and be sure that in the future, I will not have any problem rather than trying to get back on the court as quickly as possible and find myself still having health problems. So here's a guy whose tennis career is for right now gone. Anyway, we're out of time. Thank you, Gene. We accomplished a whole lot today. Thanks to Josie and all the stuff. You know, and I think that's all the call today. Anyway, we'll be back tomorrow at 7 o'clock in the morning. Rephrase.
Have a good day.
6 o'clock Central Time, 7 o'clock Eastern Time with our now 3-hour show here on Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction.